Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, life is so crazy now. I don't want to thank our wonderful person that's booking all these interviews for me. But I had three last week. I've already had two this week, and it's only Tuesday, and I've got another one tomorrow. Who knows what the rest of the week will hold. But I feel like I'm always on the air. It's this really bizarre thing that's going on. I was on last night with Alpha, the Alpha Warrior show. I was on, I hate to say this, they're kind of blurring together the names, but there's a bunch of them. I think they're all on my Facebook page. And so it just, if you check around Rumble, where was I? I was at Alpha Luna yesterday. And let me see, Friday I was on, where was I Friday? I don't know where I was Friday. Joseph Arthur. That was an interview we did, James. I forgot. This is terrible. I should have prepared this. Anyway, I'm doing a lot of interviews, a whole lot of interviews. It's really crazy what's going on. And so Action Radio is exploding. And all these hosts, there isn't a single one of them that doesn't want you to start supporting citizen legislation. And this is what I was hoping would happen. This is kind of in the plan, you know, in the wishful thinking part of the plan, is that hosts, talk radio hosts, would want to convert over to Action Radio hosts. The difference being, instead of just talking about problems, they become advocates of solutions. And the solutions are citizen legislation, and not just our citizen legislation that we currently have, but their citizen legislation and their audience's citizen legislation and the bills that are going to be written and the bills that are going to be advocated. And it's the simplest thing in the world to be an advocate of citizen legislation. You literally copy the link to the bill and you send it to government and media. That's it. That's the plan. Okay. Everything else has been done. We've written the bills. We've written a bunch. We're going to write a bunch more. We've got the setup on writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And this goes for international folks too. You know, we're growing in Canada, Australia, and England, the English-speaking world, but we got other places too. I mean, what was it? Latvia just checked in. They're part of our international group. Chile is back. They've been gone for a while. We've got some folks. There's another place in Eastern Europe. I think we've got Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, and there's someone else that just checked in as well. I'll have to go back and check my Facebook page. But the countries are springing up all over the place. And some are, then some like leave and come back. I don't think there are a lot of listeners in a lot of these nations overseas, but somebody's listening to us. You know, and so I don't know if it's the government saying, oh, don't let the people get the idea they can write their own bills. Oh, what do people write their own bills? What are we going to do? You know, it's going to be one of those things. You can just imagine, you know, a country, Iran listens to us. Who's listening to us in Iran and still alive? I mean, this is great. So, you know, things are happening. And I think that as this catches on more and more here in the United States, it's going to pick up around the world too. Especially places like Switzerland, which was interested in interviewing me back at CPAC in 2018, except they had to catch a plane. You know, back when planes were on time, you know, before COVID, and the airlines were basically destroyed. So the interest in this is worldwide. I mean, Israel is a big interest in this. You know, folks from New Zealand, you know, all over the place. Anybody that's being oppressed, which is pretty much everybody in the world right now. We used to be a much freer country than we are now, and we need to get back there. It's just one of those little coincidences of history. I mean, timing is everything. It's fascinating when I think about this that you know, to plan all these ideas in my head at a time when we have the internet so I can disperse these ideas worldwide instantly. So we have people can search for it to a time when we can create a website, writeyourlaws.com, where any citizen can post a bill that may be good enough to end up on the president's desk. You know, that we have social media so people can share everything virally. We could have millions of people overnight if we get a bill that hits. Sharing the bills like vaccine product liability, ending big tech censorship, constitutional amendment, stopping Congress from borrowing money, no withholding from your paycheck until you've earned your standard deduction, jury instructions, you know, that you have the right to judge the laws as well as the facts in the case. And that's a mandatory instruction that judges give you. It's the case anyway, but it's just not a mandatory instruction yet. So all these things that we're talking about that are happening right now, we are at a crossroad of history right now. And we are at a place where something that, I mean, my timing has basically sucked my whole life in terms of things to do. But at this particular moment in history, at this particular time, we have the technology, we have the social media, we have the internet, we have the oppression from an illegal government. We have all the things that are going wrong right now. We have a government that picked the government and is creating a horrible situation in so many different areas. They want to live by mandate and dictatorship, and we don't. And so if any time in our history, from our founding to now, you know, founding when we had the oppression of the British monarchy to now, you know, we have the oppression of an illegal government. Now is the time for citizens to have a peaceful revolution. And I think we've got the means to carry that out. And so I'm being interviewed like crazy. Things are going nuts right now with Action Radio. The show is booming, as I hoped it would. And hosts, every host that I've been with, and there's been, I think, six of them so far, have all said that they want to switch from talk to being an Action Radio host. They want to support citizen legislation and them with their own bills. Anyway, let's bring on Shelby and see what happened. We'll get our on-the-street reporter from Mar-a-Lago, you know, Shelby Fournette with the on-the-street report.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Fournette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go. So tell me, Shelby, what happened at Mar-a-Lago?
Good morning.
Did you see the feds? Did you see the feds going by on the way to Mar-a-Lago? We want to know, Shelby, what happened?
No, I did not see. I am. I wouldn't say I'm close. I'm about probably half an hour away from Mar-a-Lago.
Okay.
I have been to Mar-a-Lago once.
Wow.
Years back.
Did you have a party? Was this like the Playboy Mansion or something? They just open house, or what did they do?
Really an interesting story. Before he was in politics, at least publicly,
mm-hmm.
And I was hired to paint myself in gold and be out of the table. Like, I had a table around me. I like had to go underneath and pop out of a table and give out.
Oh, I've got a mental image that defies description. Folks, you got to understand, Shelby is drop-dead gorgeous. And the idea of her painted in gold, like the Goldfinger model, which unfortunately had a really sad face. But I'm just, do you have a video of this? Do you have a video of this,
no,
Shelby?
I
mean, no.
I don't. It was before, like, we had cell phones, but it was, like, just good ones. You know what I mean? I was married 10 years. Well, actually, I think I was married 12 years ago. And then this was, like, a couple of years before that. So this was probably 14 or 15 years ago. And
so you're like younger and totally hot, and you're leaping out of a table all in gold.
I was still in my prime.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, it was a really interesting gig that, you know, usually there was this company that would do, I was on a dance team at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so occasionally the dance captain would have these people approach them to do functions that were sort of half PR, half entertainment. And in this case, yes, it was an interesting request, but it was very good money.
Did you meet the Donald?
I have no shame in being in a bikini. I was in a bikini too. I wasn't like,
oh my goodness.
Undressed.
The story just keeps getting better, Shelby. This is,
yeah,
I
didn't have, it was body painting, but we had clothes on. It wasn't, wasn't anything that, I don't feel that drastic.
I can't imagine you do anything, you know, other than tasteful appearances, you know, but that's fun.
I try, that's, yeah.
That's great though. I mean,
yeah,
you and gold jumping
Donald
out of a table.
There was two of us, and Donald obviously was like one of the last people, and I actually just missed him because I had just gone to the bathroom because we were done like with our shift and all the guests had entered, and my coworker that was there, she's like, you just missed the Donald, and I was like, really? That's terrible. I was so upset.
Especially now, I didn't know
anything that he was going to be, you know, the president of the United States or anything like that. I would have definitely held it.
That's
funny. Yeah, it was a beautiful function. You know, the property is very much as you would expect. It's the first and only time I've ever had to go into the servants' quarters. That was really interesting.
They have servants' quarters? Oh my!
Yes,
the back door entrance. You know, deliveries to the rear kind of thing.
Yes,
you know, deliver back
absolutely
here. Okay, fine.
Yeah, They definitely had servants entrance. Like when I drove up, they were like, turn around and go to servants' quarters. I was like, oh, okay.
Did you get searched or have to go metal screeners or things like that?
I don't remember it being anything like that. There was it was 14 years ago or so, but I think I would have recollected that.
Yeah, but he was still a wealthy individual and needed protecting. I'm sure he had private security all over the place.
I think he owned it at that point, though. I think that there was like
interesting.
Wasn't there like, I think there was a transition of some sort at that point.
Huh.
I mean, it was definitely his party, and it was definitely at Mar-a-Lago, but I'm not sure that he actually owned the property at that exact time. I think it went through a couple hands, but...
Mar-a-Lago? What is Mar-a-Lago? Is it a golf course, a business,
mansion.
A residence, all of the
it's
above?
A mansion.
What is
it's mansion.
A mansion? Okay.
Yeah. Right. And on the side of... kind of like the side of, I wouldn't call it a cliff, but of an elevated area in Florida, because Florida is very flat. It's a little elevated, and it's a beautiful view cascading out to the ocean. And and it's like from my recollection anyway, again, could be a little fuzzy, but all of these, they're homes, I believe. I think they're actually private homes, but huge mansions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in that same area, like that street, because it's like there's no homes on the opposite side.
Yeah, it's the ocean, right? This is the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Do you know who else lives there? Do you know who the neighbors are?
Well, I don't know now, but I mean, all the Richie Riches, that's where they live. I mean, they live in Palm Beach area, West Palm Beach, right in that area. That's kind of the area for, I know, I do know, yeah, there's, what's his name there? Tony Robbins. He lives out there.
Okay.
Tony Robbins, definitely. And he's always joking about how, you know, he's rich now, but he didn't come from wealth. So he has a different, like, it's always interesting for him. He'll express how his children are growing up with people that have been, you know, rich forever, and they have a different mentality on how to bring up their kids. And for example, he's like, you know, you're 16, they get like Ferraris, and that's not happening. Even though
my first car was a 1964 Volkswagen, and only three of the four cylinders were working. But I managed to get it through a summer, and then I got a really nice, you know, Dodge Coronet with 100,000 miles on a 1970 Dodge, and that got me through college. So I'm well versed in, you know, survival instincts. But it's fascinating the way this whole attitude works, and it is a difference. I remember I actually met Steve Forbes when he came through the San Francisco Bay Area. I saw his bus, and I literally cut off his bus in my car because I wanted to meet him. A really stupid, inspirational, spontaneous act on my part. So I bash on his door because they don't know who I am, right? So I was like, what do you want? I said, I want to meet Steve Forbes. Why? Well, I've never shaken the hand of a billionaire. Okay, wait a minute. So they go back in the bus, and they talk for a minute, and Steve Forbes comes down and shook my hand. I talked for a minute. Sorry, Steve, I got to tell the story. This man had girly hands. This man has hands like a woman. This man has never held a broom in his life. He had, talking about someone that's always been rich, you know, and Steve, go out and dig a hole with a shovel. Do something physical. You know, you need to get some man hands. But you want to talk about wealth and privilege. I mean, he's probably always had things done for him. And in a way, he misses an experience that I think it's more valuable to, at least if you come from a very, wealth, that your parents should put you through, you know, some ditch digging, you know, some overnight camps in a tent, you know, make you or you know, go work at McDonald's or fast food for a while, just for the experience. So you understand how everybody lives, I think you'd appreciate the wealth that you have more. Now, I know Trump came from a certain amount of money, but I also think he, from what I've heard, he's got that common touch. He goes and talks to the construction workers as opposed to the bosses. He's just as happy, you know, with wearing a hard hat, you know, the guys that are mixing concrete, as he is with the multi-million dollar, you know, financial investors and venture capitalists and things like that. So he's got that both sides to him, and which I think is really impressive. Steve, I think, sort of an attitude, but, you know, dude, that's what's fascinating, shake the hands of a billionaire. That's something I never expected, is that I didn't want to squeeze too hard because I'm thinking, oh, no, this guy's never done any work, you know, but I just found that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept. I think it's easy for people like us that have had come up kind of like, I wouldn't say underprivileged, but not privileged, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But have However, I personally feel like it's a lot to put on people. And, you know, we have our own son who is living a life much more luxurious than my husband or I ever lived. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to, it's hard to understand why they can't be appreciative. You know, we kind of struggle with this a lot on our small scale, but, you know, he's living a different life, and there are some things that we just cannot recreate for him. I don't think it's really plausible for someone in an elite position, especially a child or a young person, to put them in a situation like that, like, you know, like you're saying, working at some fast food or whatever. I think, honestly, that's more of a liability than it is anything else.
Okay.
There are just things you can't recreate. I don't think it's that simple. I also don't think they really get it, even if we did try, because it's not really their reality. They know, you know, they know that they
can't. They know they don't have to be there. They don't have that.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Income's not required for the gas
it's
money.
It's a completely
yeah.
different experience.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's an understandable mindset, but even with my own kid, I don't feel like I can recreate it, so I can imagine it must be even harder at these really different levels of wealth to recreate that kind of an atmosphere. But that was just at a high school yesterday, freshman orientation, and we're so blessed that we got into a great school. I'm very excited about it. And
we got
the
kid.
School that we were,
he's been on the show.
What was that?
He's
so good. So we but he doesn't understand how lucky he is, even though I understand how lucky he is to have this opportunity where he's in a high school where people actually are, like, interested in them being happy and
wow.
You know, obviously being taught. But, like, they're, even just their mental well-being is, like, a really important part of the school there. And, like, that wasn't really the case when we were in school. In fact, I would say it was pretty depressing. I mean, they have just so many happy kids, like, just so excited to, like, you know.
Well, that's
because
they're not pressured to be obedient. They're actually encouraged to be individuals, you know, in school.
Well, there's a lot of reasons behind it, but I don't know. It wasn't like this when I was a kid. Like, we didn't have all this celebration. We were more, like, picked on, actually, more than anything. But for them, they had the cheering team. Like, every child that went into the auditorium was cheered for, like, outrageously. Like, it was just such a sweet thing. And we went around.
Well,
there
can be too much. Do they have trophies for winners, or do they have trophies for everybody? You know, I can see where there might be, an overachievement issue.
No, they were just being nice to the freshmen. It was just
okay.
Sweet.
Well, no, that makes
one
sense.
Of the cultural
you know what I'm saying,
things,
though? You know, it's like my first concern is that the competition's out and, you know, I don't think it's at your school, but, you know, a lot of, especially, you know, young white males are taught that they're white supremacists and they're oppressors and they have to, you know, be subordinate to make up for past sins or something like that. And there's a lot of really oppression, you know, it's discrimination that's, you know, that's going on in the schools right now. And so if you got a good school, that's perfect. But I worry that a lot of schools, you know, are getting into the critical race theory thing, even though they say they're not. And there's a you know, toxic masculinity, white oppression, white privilege, white male privilege, you know, that really pervades a lot of our education system right now. And it's damaging, you know, an entire generation of men, especially young white men. And so there's problems. So you found a good school. I'm so happy because you got a brilliant kid.
Yeah, well, we're also lucky we're in Florida, you know, where our governor is really quite on top of things like that, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But I see a lot of the mass media transitioning to that type of white guilt, so to speak, and things like that. Like, I don't agree with all of that. I've always felt that we, in order to be equal, we have to be not separate. And I feel like now more than ever, the last couple of years, there's been more separation of a specific black color, and, like, that is separating from us becoming equals still. Like, we are, I feel like we kind of got past that in the 70s when I was growing up, and I certainly wasn't racist. I certainly believed that we were equal, and I know everyone worked so hard to get that out, that equality out there. And now we have all this separation again, but it's more done by the people of color, not all of them, but many of them want to be separate. And that, in a sense, is going to, I think, bring us backwards, bring them backwards. I think it's a really bad move. But that's not the way it is here. In Florida, you know, they're really trying plus we have a very high, we have a very good mix of people here, big mix of race. But this school definitely is trying to just be inclusive and celebrate everybody. And it was really sweet. But again, the point of this conversation is just to say that he doesn't realize how good he has it. He doesn't realize because he doesn't have anything to compare it to. And he won't. Like, he's only going to high school once. It's not really like you can really make him understand the differences in different high schools. And, you know, he's only got one to go to. But anyway, so as far as travel goes, we're going just to get you back on track to travel.
yeah, please.
Basically, basically things are really popping up. I'm super excited to say we've had about 50 people, and I haven't even done a really good promotion yet because we've been so busy with getting our son ready for high school this week. Mm-hmm. But without even really doing promotion, just to our existing mailing list and such. We've had at least 50 downloads for our free ebook for the travel agent training and group leader training. And we've had two more enrollments last week, and I believe two more enrollments were going to happen today. So that's four in the last couple of days that are want to be in group leader or travel agent training, which is super exciting because it's 90 minutes and it's really your own business. It's a really great opportunity and something I had been envisioning for a long time since I left my last position that I was with for so long, due to the stifling, there was no growth there. But I thought I'd like to teach people how to host, teach people how to book their own travel and get discounts on travel, and teach people because often, you know, as a cruise director in any capacity, how do you get your job, you know, and. At this point, I'm like, I'd love to like pass the baton. Let me get you all the information you need. And we own a travel company now, and we're a host agency and licensed, bonded, insured, and we're ready to teach you how to do what I did, because I'm really kind of entrenched in staying at the home. I don't need to travel. I don't really have any, I need to make sure my kid's on track and, traveling.
Well, you've seen so much of the world already, which is incredible.
Yeah, and I love where we live too. That's the other thing. I mean, when you love where you live, it's not. It does. Like, I don't have any need at all to travel, I also know that I have so much knowledge to give people that, you know, I can help people do what they want to do, and I love that gift I loved to travel when I did travel. You know, it was the best thing in my life. You know.
Yeah, doing what you love is so important. You should give your website now. Then I have a question for you.
Oh, that is travelfun.biz, and you can look under travel agent training or group leader training, or you can just message me on Facebook, social, Instagram, LinkedIn, Shelby Furnett, or Solo Travel Expert. So lots of ways to get a hold of me.
Good. And also we have our XM Radio Cruise and Travel page, so feel free to post, and folks are interested, you can find Shelby there as well, too. Yeah. My question, though, is on the travel agent business. There was a time, you know, back when I think it was like the Sabre computer system, and people, they didn't make their own flight bookings. They didn't make their own cruise bookings. You had a travel agent, and if you wanted to go on a tour package, a travel agent would sit down with you and actually arrange for your travel, and the airlines and the cruise lines and the train lines, they would pay the travel agents to do this, and travel agents got all these really cool trips. They can go to places so they'd know what to sell.
Right.
And so if you wanted to go to Whistler Mountain in Canada, or if you wanted to go take a riverboat, you know, cruise in Europe, chances are your travel agent or one of the agents in that office had been there. They have a specialty area, and they would take care of the whole thing. And then all of a sudden the internet came in, and these bargain travel things came about, which is really great, except that no knowledge came with them. So people got bargain prices, but they might not have gotten exactly what they expected because they didn't have the guidance of a travel agent, but they didn't want to pay for a travel agent. They wanted the cheap prices. So where are we now? Where did we come from? Mm. And where are we now in terms of the travel agent and the website booking for people?
Yeah, and, you know, that's a really good point. That's a fair question that I think I kind of raise over because I'm in the industry so much, and it's probably something I really should address more. First and foremost, I think now more than ever, with all the different protocols, like even right now in Europe, you have to have, for some of the places in Europe, not all of them, you need to have a vaccine within the last 9 months. And a lot of people don't realize that because they have no vaccines on 5 days or shorter cruises on most of the cruise lines out of these states. So to not have a travel agent at this point, and I've actually had very good friends that know what I do but just do their own booking, and they've totally wasted thousands of dollars because they're not vaccinated and they didn't realize, and, you know, they can't get their money back now because they've kind of stopped doing all that. So now more than ever is a time to book with a travel agent. And number two, it doesn't cost you any more. At least it doesn't cost you any more with any of my travel agents. They don't have a booking charge or anything like that. We're just making the commission from the vendor. And that means you'd pay the same price. And we can meet or beat any price. And the reason for that is that they are promoting a lot of specials for travel agencies like us because we're doing marketing. We're doing marketing spend. So they're giving us incentives. So more likely than not, if we can definitely meet the price, but we can probably get you a $50, $100 extra, like towards whatever your bar tab or whatever you're going to do.
Like upgrades?
Tours,
you know,
yeah,
tourist
upgrade,
to first
like
class
that.
Kind of thing. Okay.
Exactly.
Better cabins.
Exactly. Better cabins,
yeah.
Better rooms, just extra okay. stuff. It's not only that, it's just time consuming. And if you don't know what you're doing, you are going to spend three times the time it takes a travel agent. It's still time consuming for us too. But it's obviously we have, you know, our fingertips, we have all our logins, we're ready. So it just really doesn't make any sense not to book with a travel agent these days, especially. But because of the promotions that they're doing for travel agencies, because they're trying to get more travel, you know, back up to snuff, and because they don't charge you, it just doesn't make any sense to try. And I tell my clients all the time, just if you see something, please just screenshot it, send it to me. I'll let you know if it's just one of these types of what we would call like lead generators, which is really not really a real thing. Like they don't put the taxes in, they don't put the port fees in. They're not really giving you the full price. You know what I mean? There's asterisks, and it seems like it's so cheap, but when you actually do out the math, you're like, no, it's really not that cheap. So, you know, there's those types of situations quite a bit in travel promotions. Anyway, we can meet or beat any price, and we don't charge you for any of the services that we're providing, and we save you a lot of time. Plus, we can, you know, likely save you from wasting your money because there's
well knowledge. What kind of value to put on your knowledge and your experience? You're bringing, you know, I don't know how many years, lots of years of travel experience to this, from everything you've done, from every job, from every thing you've done. And the beauty of this, and this is something that I didn't realize, this is why I asked you the question, is that you're not saving by doing this yourself on a website. If you can match the prices, there's no reason not to go through an agent. It's like before, you know,
exactly.
the agents weren't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that that's a big misconception. At some point with travel, probably in the last, before COVID hit, there was some high luxury travel agents that were charging fees for helping, which, you know, is a choice that you could make back then because people were just going online. But I would say cheaper is not always better. In fact, I would almost say with travel, unless you've been there before and you know exactly what you want to do, you're most likely missing out on something really big, because if it's really super cheap, there's something they're leaving out that you should be doing. You know, you don't want to, it's kind of like, you don't want to go to Rome and not see the Colosseum. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that that's an obvious one, but there's so many not obvious ones where you're just going places and you're missing out because they're not including something really important that really is kind of a must see. But how would you know when you're just trying to get the bottom base price of whatever it is, you know? So there's just a lot of benefit with people with experience. And then it's a benefit to be a travel agent right now, not just because people really are looking for help, but also because they are giving out the most discounts, the biggest FAM, we call them FAM trips, familiarization trips, that I've ever seen in the past 10 years, 15 years. I mean, they are giving so many incentives to travel agents to experience the product where they didn't really need to do that before because they were just booked with people. So why give out things for free, right? But now that there was a lull in travel, they've really started to give new travel agents like the kind of discounts I haven't seen in the past 15 years. So it's really a great time to figure it out, you know, get started now, because they're not going to get, once travel really gets up and moving again, they're going to take those options away, you know, because they don't need to give them. So it's exciting that that's happening, and we're really happy to change some lives and sort of have my vision come to fruition, because it was a little disappointing when we launched the travel agent program last year. I thought, you know, people would be ready, but they were not. So It's 50,000 times a month they are searching how to become a travel agent on the internet. 50,000
wow.
times a month. Yeah, so that's exciting. So we redid our website's SEO and how to become a travel agent. I think we had travel ambassador, but we changed the wording so that the SEO would pull up. And yeah, it's very exciting times finally. And I don't want to look at how long it will take us to recoup the loss, but it's nice to see the action coming in. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting I think group travel has changed too. It used to be that people travel individually, they travel with their families, you know, and like I say, they'd go through a travel agent and they'd get their individual tour. But now it seems much more there's group tours, there's singles groups, there's different groups, there's, you know, business groups and companies are doing trips and there's eco tours and historic tours and all these different options out there that you couldn't possibly figure it out all on your own. But it seems like the business has also changed in that regard, that there's more group things that are there's more specialty trips, and that would an agent would be nice to have that too.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. The groups, all kinds of groups, even family groups, work groups, definitely singles groups. And the singles thing I've always known. I mean, you know, we met through that whole
yep.
scene, and
yeah.
I would say I've always known that was going to explode. That there was nowhere but up for that growth for that particular demographic, because you can see very easily that most people are not getting married anymore, or waiting very long times, and there's not as much. Not as much interest in having a family. I mean, a lot of kids are, when they do get married, they're choosing not to have kids, not because they can't, because that whole cultural nucleus thing has changed. And I've definitely always seen the singles cruising scene to be on the up and up and only in growth. So we're happy about that too. And we're trying to make sure I like to offer like a quality, good value, but not cheap. That's another thing. It's kind of like going to a cheap bar to meet your boyfriend or hopefully meet people. You don't go to a cheap dive bar to go meet, you know, people that you want in your life. You know what I mean? Like, that's the same idea of going on a cheap sailing. You go on the cheapest thing, well, you're going to meet mostly the cheapest people. And there's nothing wrong with wherever they're at. Like, it's not a judgment of, like, whether or not it's good or bad. But it's like, if you're going to try and be on a single sailing, usually the people that I would like to have people that are professional, that have money to spend on travel, that are not looking for the cheapest everything. You know, they're looking for quality, of course, good value. Nobody wants to overpay, but you want to be around people that are in that same mindset, and that there's a certain kind of maturity, there's a certain kind of emotional growth that comes with not being desperate for funds all the time. I mean, and everybody's at a different place and everyone starts differently. So I'm not judging where anyone is. I'm just saying that the kind of singles we are gravitating to are singles that are professionals, that have extra funds, that are looking for quality and an experience that's going to be something that they can go home and say, wow, rather than just, you know, the lowest price bargain basement, you know, cruise around the Caribbean. That's not what they're looking for, you know.
Yeah, and there's a big difference being on a cruise for a week to actually get to know people, as opposed to, you know, your bar for a couple of hours. You know, that's a whole different thing. I got Josie on the line too, so I want to get to her real quickly. And see if she has any travel questions for you. I don't know if we've
okay.
done that before. Josie, do you have any questions for Shelby before we get started?
No, not right now, sweetie.
Okay, we'll probably do it next time. Shelby, anything else? This is actually really quite interesting. You know, I had no idea how the travel agent industry has changed, but it seems like it went, you know, way to the individual side with the travel agent, then it went way to the I'm going to do it myself on the internet side, and now it seems to be swinging back again. So it's a big pendulum swing, and it seems to be a good one the way it's looking.
Yeah, for us it is. It's finally a good one. But yeah, things are changing in general by leaps and bounds everywhere, I think. But in this case, it's a one for our side, I guess, and really looking forward to helping more people sort of kind of make their dreams come true, because that's a super fun thing. You know, when you get to the point in your life and your career where you can, just like when you were a flight instructor, you know, it's like the beauty of flying, to give that gift to someone.
I may do that again.
Part of evolution, yeah.
Yeah.
The fun thing.
Well, you know about
so.
Action Radio 1, right? The jet I'm going to get? Action Radio 1? They wanted to take you in.
No, that's cute.
It's called a Viper Jet. You can look it up. I'll send you a picture.
A Viper Jet. Oh, that sounds exciting. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's a two-seat. It's like a military trainer. Okay, it's a 500 plus mile an hour fully aerobatic two-seat tandem jet. It's just like a military trainer, but there's no stuff on it. But it's fully maneuverable. And I think we should fly upside down over the beach, and then we can talk.
We'll have
a nice little chat upside down. I got plans.
Upside down.
You
might need someone
to
else for the upside down ride, but I'll come for the right side up ride.
You got the right side up portion? Okay, fine. But you should think about learning to fly. It might be a whole new thing. You know who would love to learn to fly is your son. I think we'd get a kick out of it.
I'm sure you're correct. Let's hold off there, buddy. I'd like to keep him around for a while.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much, Josie. Have a great session. And I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Shelby.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossie knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossie.
Yeah, so what's going on? What's happening in the world?
Hey, good morning. Dobre
good morning.
Ultra. Buenos días.
Buenos días
a todos nuestros
Guten Tag.
Audiencia.
Bruce Scott.
Hey.
Best with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Oh, yeehaw. No.
G'day. How's it going?
Yeah. I'm good.
Konnichiwa. Josie-san.
A little bit disappointed what happened yesterday, but you know what? I'm okay today. Yeah.
Well, this is hysterical that Pianchi's on the line too. I guess he wants to talk to you as well. You missed Shelby there, Pianchi.
I had to run home to say hello to Josie.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Hey, good morning, Pianchi. ¿Qué pasa?
I ran home and swam across the stream, so I make sure I can say hello.
He'll walk across broken glass in bare feet to talk to Josie. This is incredible. So,
there
yeah.
you go.
So, as big a Trump supporter as you are, what's your take on the Mar-a-Lago raid, which was, in my
Mar-a-Lago.
Opinion, incredibly stupid? But what do you think?
Well, the criminals, the crooked deep state fraud are so desperate because the game is over and they know it. And we know it. And they're desperate because a lot of stuff, you know, the 2,000 mule was released.
Well, the evidence is out there. Everybody who knows, who's looked at the evidence, knows that it's a stolen election. The vote fraud, is legion. It's huge. It's massive. It's easily proven. It's all on video. You know, we've got thousands of affidavits. They had audits in Arizona and other places. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has outlawed mail-in ballots or some other stuff. You know, so this is – but the problem is, you know, they're still in power. You've got Chris Wray at the FBI KGB. You've got Merrick Garland, who's the head Gestapo leader up there at the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
You've got Brandon the moron, the incompetent, who has no idea what's going on. And you've got, basically Marxists behind the scenes pulling the strings. So they're able to – and this is the New York office, as I understand, the New York office of the FBI, not even the Florida office. Now, I got Michelle Salzman coming in the next at 9 o'clock. And we're going to talk about this because I'm thinking that Florida – yeah, you can call back in too if you want. But because you work in Pensacola, you're probably in her district when you're working. But I'm thinking that Florida needs to start protecting Florida citizens from a tyrannical Marxist false government. And so I'll be asking her about that. Obviously,
I
just
love the Marxist.
It is the Marxist. Marxista. You know, you got to – what was it called? Marx? How do you say it?
Marxista.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Marxista.
Okay.
That's what we have.
Teach Spanish. Yeah.
Well, my take on this whole thing, Greg, at first I didn't even know about it. I was dancing Zumba and one of my friends, pilot, very conservative, he approached me, picking up his wife. He said, did you hear what happened? Blah, blah, blah. And I got nervous and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I settled down a little bit and I believe, my opinion, this Trump allowed the whole thing to happen, to set him up, to expose him. So now he can show all the evidence against this deep state. And I believe that's what's happening. And I hope that's true.
Yeah. See,
because
I'm not convinced yet. And this is, for those that don't know, Josie and I have a running debate on this particular topic.
Okay.
Because I think if he, you know, the best thing Trump could have done is to get out there and for, in fact, the Gelding Party, you know, if the Gelding Party actually had any allegiance to Trump, well, not, that's probably the wrong way to put it. If they had any allegiance to this nation and to law, I don't like the term rule of law, but to the law, you know, and to fair elections and to, you know, prosecuting vote fraud, Trump would be in office. And the fact that they're not doing it, you know, this is, you've got a combination rhino, deep state, Marxist, Democrat coalition that thinks this is okay. Yeah, they're going to protest. The Republicans will do their little protesting, but in reality, they don't really care. Now, the good news is nobody got hurt. Nobody got shot. You know, they didn't shoot the dog. You know, they didn't go in and arrest Trump and bring him out in handcuffs and things like that. That would have caused a riot.
That's what they wanted, probably. That's why.
Well,
Trump,
no, they knew he wasn't
there.
So they did it when he wasn't there. So he was under no threat. Yeah. But here's the question we had. That I was on an interview last night, Alpha Warrior, and it's available on Rumble. And we were speculating what happened when Trump's armed Secret Service detail met the armed FBI, you know, raiders. You know, what was that conversation like?
I don't know. I hope I get more details. So, yes. So we should find out more about it today.
Yeah.
What's really going on.
You know, how much more evidence do they need? We know the election was fraud. We know that there's an illegal deep state operating. We know that there was a coup. We know that these people are traitors. So I don't understand why the folks that you're supporting are waiting. You know, how much more evidence could they possibly get? Every day there's new evidence of crimes.
We have to be able to introduce all the evidence, and timing
it's already
what's happening.
You've got tens of thousands of affidavits of vote fraud. You've got videos. You've got people on tape stuffing ballots, and you got 2,000 mules. You've got video evidence of people, you know, scanning the same ballot, you know, hundreds of times. You've got, you know, all the statistical analysis. You've got Dr. Shiva's analysis. You've got the entire Arizona audit. You've got enough for the state legislatures to push the Trump electors to disqualify the Brandon electors. I was talking about this with Tina yesterday. Tina's in Arizona. And say, what the hell's wrong with your state? I mean, you're doing the right thing, but you didn't go far enough, because all the other wimpy, you know, gonadless states are waiting for Arizona to decertify the Brandon electors. We're trying to get Wendy Rogers on.
Yeah.
But they need to do that. In fact, I'm going to talk to Michelle Salzman about having Florida, you know, declare that Brandon is an illegitimate government and start protecting Florida's sovereign citizens against a rogue federal government. That's what we need to start doing. But don't wait for prosecution, you know, because this nation's suffering daily under a coup. So the waiting to me is the crime. The waiting to gather more and more evidence, that's the crime. That's as bad as the crime of the Marxist dictatorship.
You know, Greg, if when the fraud happened with the election and all that, if Trump would have tried to fight back immediately and tried to force the whole thing, they won and everything, they wouldn't be able to show the people exactly the corruption that's been going on for years and years and years, okay? And that's what's going to happen. It's coming. We, the patriots, we are patient, because now we know what's really happening, but before we were like impatient. But they
I'm impatient.
I'm really impatient.
Understand. See, I think he never should have left the White House. I think he should have just stayed and fought it. He's never conceded the election. You know, and the thing is, people think you.
That we don't know.
Well, see, that's the problem. You can't keep saying that, because, you know, you say, well, we don't know. Okay, well, great. There's a lot of things we don't know, and that's fine. But what we do know, you know, should be acted on.
We will.
And so that's to me. Yeah, but the secret plan. Just wait. Just be patient. It's all going to happen.
Well,
sorry.
You will.
It doesn't.
Find out.
It does. It's already too late, as far as I'm concerned. It should have happened already.
It's not too late.
It really should have. Okay. And that's where we disagree on it. Pianki, what do you think? We need a third party here to Pianki, what do you think? He's not talking.
Well, I'm anxious to see when things are going to happen too.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, so change topics a little bit here. I guess we can talk about this on the air, that I proposed that we'd have a Spanish news 15-minute segment. We got Chile is back. We've got countries all. We got Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Belize. Well, they speak English. We've got Costa Rica, Venezuela. You know, we got Brazil, but they speak Portuguese. But there's probably Spanish speakers there. You know, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador. All these countries are and Chile just joined us again. We've got all these Spanish speaking countries, plus Spain.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, you know, if we want to do it next week, I'll talk to Dorothy Diana, our sex and sensuality reporter, is going to be on the next next hour. I think 15 minutes between 8 and 8:15 would be a great time for Spanish news, and we could advertise that and make that a regular feature of Action Radio, that you just give a news broadcast. Unfortunately, it's the one time where you'll be able to talk without me interrupting. Because I don't speak Spanish, so this would be a good
time. But don't you think the American people here will be bored to hear that Spanish thing?
I don't know. I don't think so, because there's enough Spanish speakers. See, I think, you know, especially what if we break into Cuba? What if people start smuggling our things? What about the people that you know, in Mexico that are wondering, you know, what's going on with cartels? You can broadcast things,
and
that
I
Mexican
can warn
news won't
them,
tell
don't
them.
Come to America.
Exactly. Yeah, we could say, yeah, stay away, you know, because I think there's a lot of things you could do, because, and it'd be your report, you know, to Central and South America in Spanish. Bianca, what do you think? I think it'd be a great feature for the show, even if I don't understand it.
Maybe 10 minutes.
All right, 10 minutes. 10 minutes, that's fine, too.
We can try.
We'll try next week. Yeah, I'll get a chance to.
Since you mentioned Cuba, since you mentioned Cuba, there's a lot going on in Cuba. I've been getting a lot of messages from the people that I communicate back and forth, different families.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is the government is burning a lot of different oil in different areas. And people are having a hard time right now in Cuba to travel point A to point B in Cuba. So a lot of people right now are in like in horse wagons, you know, like back in the 50s, because a lot of the taxi drivers, which a lot of them are doctors in Cuba, they do it part time in order to make it and survive, because a Cuban doctor only makes $60 to $80. I think it's up to $100 now. But they're struggling. So
$100 a month, right? Not a day. We're talking $100 a month.
A month, yes.
Yeah. I want to make that
a
clear.
A cleaning lady makes about $10 a month. Yeah, so, but, and they make it impossible for us to send money. Like, I've been having a hard time to send money, and if we finally find somehow to send it, they're not allowed to get dollar bills. They give them in pesos over there, you know, to the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... But there's a lot of explosions and people, I was on Facebook last night and everybody's upset because they had this huge explosion in one area in Cuba and people can hardly breathe, and that stuff wasn't going to stop because this oil is going to burn and burn and burn, you know. So they're trying to do everything to hurt the Cuban people, because a lot of people are living by the thousands right now. So they're trying to kill a lot of people, actually. And they're fleeing to Nicaragua, and from Nicaragua they're coming all the way here. Some are not making it because of the cartels and the coyotes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Biden doesn't want them here because they want freedom, and that's not what the Biden fraud, corruption, crooked left communists are all about here. To make this country communist, so they don't want people that they've been in communist for over 50 years fleeing, and they're going to convince other people that we don't want that here. So all these Cuban people really are praying for us. Let me tell you, from the different people that I communicate, they're praying for us that we do not become communists, and it's not going to happen.
Where are they going to go? You know, I mean, if the United States becomes another communist country, where are people going to go? Well, here's a question, though, too. Are the illegal aliens finding that this is not the welfare paradise, the money growing on trees land that they expected? You know, what's news reports from Central America particularly? Are people finding that it's not exactly as expected? when they got here.
Exactly. There's a lot of videos in Spanish that they make you laugh sometimes because they make jokes about it. They say, is this the America dream right here? And you're coming like a sardine in a semi-truck that they can hardly breathe and a lot of them are dying. So they have a video about that. And then they have this guy working in a house doing painting and different things, you know. So they just make joke about it. But in reality, they come here because they do get a lot of freebies. And not just the Latino people, but people from 46 countries are fleeing to America.
Yeah. Now, are the cartels charging? Are the cartels charging, say, non-Mexicans or Latin America folks more money? I mean, the Chinese get charged more from the Mexican cartels?
No, they're charging the same. They're charging anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 per head. Huh. And a lot of the time, they kill you, so they don't have to do the work by bringing you all the way across. Yeah.
Oh, so they take the money and kill you anyway.
Sucks.
So is Mexico, are they completely, they find it impossible to do anything about these cartels? Because Mexican army is pretty big. You know, I would think they could deal with these cartels if they wanted to.
Yeah, but the Mexican government is so corrupt.
Oh, okay.
No, no. The Mexican government is so corrupt, and now it's worse with the communist president that our government placed in office.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that we did in the Ukraine. Our government placed Zelensky, the cocaine addict crackhead, in office. Oh yeah, our government is doing that. The same thing in Colombia. They just put a communist president in Colombia too. So our government is behind this dirt, and it's been going on for many years. Look, they have President Somoza in Nicaragua for 40 years. Our government. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, listen.
And then our government is giving weapons to the Sandinistas, killing because they were upset. They were sick and tired of Somoza and the father, the son, and it went on and on.
Well, that's the Reagan program.
And the people believe.
You know, the Contras. That was bizarre.
Yeah.
Remember them?
Our government is trafficking so much weapon to the Ukraine that it's not even funny. Biden is sending so much weapon to the Ukraine. A Ukrainian airline crashed leaving Ukraine, a couple of weeks ago, and the plane was loaded with weapons leaving Ukraine. And
was it overloaded?
Ukraine is taking all this country. Oh, please, give me some weapons. We need to fight. It's all a lie. Yeah.
So are they selling the weapons to other places that we're giving them? You're saying that an airliner is flying? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Now it makes sense. All right, that makes sense.
That's what they're doing.
There's $82 billion worth of our weapons, the Taliban has. You know, they could probably purchase those on the markets cheap. I was watching a news show just the other day, and they had, you had Taliban, soldiers with American-made, M16 rifles and carbines. I know where those came from. Those are Brandon's guns that they gave away, yeah.
But probably a lot of the weapons left in Afghanistan are in the hands in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And this is a big business. They're selling a lot of our weapons, leaving Ukraine. And why do you think all these countries are not stepping in? Because they know exactly what's going on, what Putin is doing in the Ukraine. They know. They're not getting involved. Look, if this country was being destroyed by Russia and all that, a lot of countries would have stepped in. You know what I mean? And the United States not stepping in because the mentally ill patient we have, a fake president, he don't have control of the military. If not, he would have sent so many militaries to die over there, like the country normally does here, send our young people to die in vain.
Yeah, this is interesting. That's a really good point because you look at Afghanistan and Iraq,
we know.
Totally useless wars. You know, God bless the soldiers that went who were fighting for our country, but I don't think they were fighting for our country. I think they were fighting for the permanent war class, you know, for the bankers and the loans and the defense contractors and all the other people that profit off war. And there's a permanent war class in this country that says we have to be at war somewhere. They're the ones that caused the Ukraine war because Putin was and we talked about this with Dr. Pryor when he was on, that just 5 things, the main one being that Ukraine and other countries don't join NATO, was it. That was all he wanted. He said, don't join NATO. You know, stay, you know, you have your side, we have our side, you know, the old Warsaw Pact countries. You know, the buffer zone between Western Europe and Russia. If they just maintained that, there wouldn't be Ukraine war. So this war is a U.S. creation by our permanent war class to perpetuate war, because we have to be at war somewhere, you know, because that's how they do things in the deep state. It's fascinating. Trump didn't have a war. He ruined all those plans because he didn't have war everywhere.
And the sad part is I'm going back and forth arguing with my little missionary. Because he thinks I'm drinking Kool-Aid, and I'm not. I'm telling the truth as a missionary Christian woman. And he's blinded by the devil, obviously. And I don't care to say, because I speak out what I know. And he's upset, and because he put a thing about Ukraine with the little boy all dirty coming, that he survived the explosion in this huge building. It's fake. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And I call him on that. I said, I know you're going to be upset with me. It's on Facebook, and I don't care. I tell the truth. I'm
so
not
what's
afraid
going on
to
in,
tell the truth to people.
Oh, no, that's why I'm on the show. You know, so what's going on in Ukraine from the folks that you're talking to right there? How bad are the battles? Where
well, the
are they?
The folks in the Ukraine are blind. They're getting a lot of videos. Look, there was a lot of videos on Twitter, and they pull them off because they were from 2014, and there was pictures from a firefighter helping in the Ukraine and all that. But it was from Australia from 2014. So they pull it off because they're getting busted with all this. And some of the videos that they're sending to these poor people are videos from video games, you know. But I have real videos of Russian soldiers being tortured, nailed them to a cross, literally like Jesus Christ went through. And then they sending them on fire. And these people are evil and demons. And Putin is rescuing many Ukrainian families from being murdered, genocide, and rape and torture by their Zelensky government. That's exactly what's going on. But my friends in the Ukraine, they're blind. A lot of them, I'm not even speaking right now, because one young girl, she got upset, and she's like my daughter to me. And she was very upset because she doesn't believe it. She said, no, Putin is... it's killing us and all that. I said, no, sweetie, it's not. It's the neo-Nazis doing this, being paid by our government. That's exactly what's happening. And our government, their money is being frozen in Russia. Putin froze everything over there, including a lot of Hollywood stars. And the media was there. Yeah, he did froze everything in Russia.
Well, freezing the assets, that's what we did to Iran when they took our hostages. So freezing assets is a very common thing to do. So I'm lax in looking up Laura Logan and some of the things that are happening over there with the Nazis in Ukraine. And people who are new to the show, they're saying, what are we talking about Nazis in Ukraine? Okay. Go ahead.
Talk to your friend, Anne Vandreveld. I cannot pronounce her name. To her, because she knows all these people, and she's on board with me about the Ukraine. She knows all about it.
Okay.
We know what's going on.
Let's get her back on the show.
Eventually, you need to invite her. And she's a state national. I'm so excited about that.
She's a what?
I'm checking into it myself.
What's a state national?
That means you're going to be free of real America, and you're not going to be under the corporation that we have. That's why Donald Trump never got a paycheck. He didn't want to, because I believe he's a state national.
What's a state national? Is that like a sovereign citizen, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, state national is what we're supposed to be, that we're blessed to be born in America until these people sold us out to the British, to the United Nations. So when your parents sign your birth certificate at birth, they sign in you to this corporation, which is the deep state running our country for, 250 years. So the thing is deep. I'm trying to learn more about it. I've been studying it a little bit more.
Yeah.
I just started. So let me tell
Let me give you a little bit of advice, because I've heard about this for 30, 40 years. It's not true. We're not a corporation. We're a country. We've been a country since the Constitution was ordained and established. And the idea that sovereign citizens don't have to pay taxes and we're not part of the corporation, we're not part of the British Empire, is a bunch of nonsense. Jesse, it's a bunch of nonsense.
No, but it's happening. It's happening.
No, okay. Yeah, all right. Wait. Hold on. Let me just finish. You can study it. You can take a look at it. But bottom line, you know, and even if you don't like taxes, you know, you have to pay them until we can change the laws, you know, to get rid of things like withholding tax and things like that. But as far as being a sovereign citizen and declaring yourself not part of the corporation, it's a bunch of nonsense. It's not true. Okay. I hate to break the burst. It's not true. I hate to burst the bubble. It's not true.
Well, I'm going
to
prove it to you eventually once I...
Okay. You know,
anyway.
Like Trump, you know, and all these people are going to get arrested and everything's going to happen someday. And I love your optimism. I love your theories. I just don't believe them.
They will.
I just don't think they're realistic
they
or true. Well, how can we be a corporation and a country at the same time? How can a country be a corporation? Let me, I'll get to Dorothy in just a second here.
I'm gonna give you a book that I'm about to order.
Oh, I'm too ADHD to read a book. If I this is my biggest problem. I can't read books. I mean, I can write them. Writing them is easy.
You're like me.
I'm serious.
Me too.
In fact, I got a book in mind. You know, I'm ready to start the next book. I just need a couple of sponsors, a little extra income, you know, and I have a book that's going to blow everybody away. You know, I can't tell you the details yet because, you know, I want to write it. But, that's in the works now. But, but the sovereign citizen stuff, be very careful of that. It's been tried. It's been talked about. Do you know what happens with the sovereign citizens who don't pay their taxes? They're all in jail. All of them. All in jail.
It's not just paying taxes, Greg. It's that you're going to be a free American. You don't have to obey them at all.
I'm a free American.
You don't have to carry a driver's license. No, you're not. You have to obey.
Okay,
Bernard, in St. Louis. He was driving through St. Anne, Missouri, right outside of St. Louis, and had a traffic violation. Cop pulled him over. And he pulled out one of the sovereign citizen driver's license, and the police officer, a female, a white female, she said, "Look, Bernard, I know you. I know where you work. You either give me your right driver's license, I'm going to take you to jail." And he did.
Yeah. Well, of course. It's a bunch of nonsense. Now, do I think the driver's license should be abolished? Absolutely. Do we have a right to travel? Absolutely. Can you enforce traffic laws without a driver's license? Absolutely. You do it the way you normally do it. You pull people over if they break the speed limit and all those other things. There's no reason for a driver's license. However, until we overturn that law and make this a right, a declared right.
Well, you
got to
have
a
driver's license. It proves that you have, you know, passed the test for being roadworthy.
Certificate.
And also, it applies to your car insurance companies.
Well, I got Dorothy online too. I'm going to bring her in the conversation.
State national, Greg, you don't have to have a driver's license unless you are driving an Uber, you're driving a truck for a company. But if it's personal, you don't have to have a driver's license. Ever.
Yeah, trust me on this. Change the law. Don't just give yourself a made up card. You know, change the law. If you want to get rid of the driver's license, and I think we should, okay? Now, as far as Pianchi's point, we should do for pilots, have a certificate that proves your competence. But it's not a license. It's a very different thing. It's a certificate of competence. And it'd be interesting if insurance companies, you know, came up with a lot of criteria for that. Dorothy, you got dogs in your background there?
No, I don't. Must be Bianchi.
No, it's Dorothy.
Well, no, it ain't me.
Of course I can hear them.
But here's the thing: how would you get points on your certificate for violations? They put points on a driver's license before revocation kicks in.
I think you do it like you'd register any crime. You do it like you register parking tickets, like you register a crime. Mm-hmm. You know, like infractions, warnings, misdemeanors, things like that. It goes on your personal record. Like anyway, you wouldn't have to put it on a driver's license.
But the good news about this whole thing is thousands and thousands of Americans are becoming a state national now. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's a total waste of time. It's really dumb. All right, Jesse, let's get some contact information, get your business if you want, and I want to get on to actually, I got to play a couple things real quickly. It'll take about 2 minutes to play some stuff,
okay.
And then we'll get to Dorothy.
My nickname is Josie. That's not my real name. I have so many names.
Jesse's a mystery. We keep her confidential. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For now. Until Trump's return, I'll be in the open. Ruth Uniform Shop. I have a uniform store on Olive Road in Pensacola. And we do sell honey, too, if anybody wants local honey. We sell quite a bit of honey. My husband is a beekeeper, so we do have that.
Yeah, but he still won't come on the show and talk about his bees. You know, we got to get him on. I want to do a bee show.
Eventually.
I want to show this bee-rated.
Okay.
The great bee show. Yeah.
So
all right.
So to you guys, I'll continue listening, okay?
Okay.
Unless this person has a question for me or anything, I'll stay on for a couple seconds here.
Okay. Well, I don't think Dorothy has a question. Dorothy, do you have a question for Josie before I play a couple things then get to you?
I don't, but I really, really enjoy listening to her, and I'm in agreement with her on several of her points. So I appreciate
it. All right. Yeah, we can talk about those too. We're pretty open here. We don't have a lot of restrictions. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's it. God bless. Talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Hang in there, Dorothy. Be right back to you in about 2 minutes. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments, and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with My Pillow and now goes to My Coffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of My Pillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. My Pillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, we're back with an amazing new report here, Dorothy Diana, with the Sex and Sensuality Report. And it's been pretty steamy here the last few weeks. I've got to tell you, we have some incredible conversations. So what's on your mind this week, Dorothy?
Hi, Greg. I'm happy to be here. And
good.
It has been steamy, which can be fun. So today, on my mind was the refractory period. And, you know, I think I've told you before, I kind of go through my week and just listen and have conversations and kind of just ask the universe, you know, what's a hot topic that we can discuss and what's on people's minds. And refractory period kept coming up. And I know that doesn't sound very exciting,
well, feel
but
free to
I feel like
refract
so
on that
associated with
as opposed to reflect on that. So you're going to refract on it rather than reflect on it? I'm teasing. What is it?
Well,
anyway?
We talked a bit about hormones in a few other of our sessions, and this is all related, and then really related to sexual pleasure, satisfaction, mood, the environment we create around us, and the refractory period is the time it takes for people to be able to have a sexual interaction again that perhaps culminates in orgasm. So, you know, for women, there's virtually none. They can have multiple orgasms and usually are ready to go again if everything's in working order. And that is that can extend with even older age. So unlike men, and for men it's very different, the refractory period is a very extended period for many men, especially over 40. Young men, maybe a few seconds to a few minutes, age 14, right?
Why don't they call the recharge period? It just seems to me that it's
the recharge period.
This is one of God's little jokes, you know, that, I mean, why can't men do it as often as we want to do it? You know, and that why do we even need to have a refractory? Why can't we just, I mean, you know, it's just, there's something wrong here with the, there's all these little accidents. And when I get to talk to God sometime, I say, like, you know, why did you do that? I'm just curious.
Because it's so fun, right? Why can't we do it over?
Yeah, exactly. Why can't we do the multiple thing as much as we want? I mean, you know, why?
I feel like there's actually an evolutionary advantage, probably the immense amount of energy it takes for men to create that amount of healthy sperm and to ejaculate and to keep the erection, and they're working really hard. And then women, the multiple orgasm is very beneficial because, you know, there's a lot of theories that support that it has a beneficial effect on increasing the flow of the seminal fluid up into her, and beneficial for perhaps fertilization, and for bonding. So,
okay, this is interesting. You know, I'm now curious that the whole not working orgasms. For men, is there any, you know, what's the difference between male and female in terms of intensity? Do guys, because of the reproductive aspect of this, is there more intense energy release, emotional and physical reaction to this, where it wouldn't need to be a multiple thing that we're kind of putting together in one, as opposed to spreading it out over several? Or is each orgasm for women as strong as the previous one, or is it even stronger? And it's like, you know, party time. As opposed to guys like, wait a minute, I'll be right back. You know, I'm curious.
Usually a little less strong for women on the consecutive orgasms, but equally pleasurable, right? And did you know men can be multi-orgasmic, and that can be something you're born with or something you practice, which might be a fun thing to talk about.
How does that work?
There's a lot of things that can decrease the refractory period also, if that's something that's to be desired. But, there's techniques. You're probably familiar with tantric sex.
Not as familiar as I want to be. So this is something I need a lot of practice. I want to get, you know, well-versed in my tantric sex, just in case anybody needs to know that.
I feel like tantric sex is the next level. I feel like this is the answer to many things, actually. But some of the techniques involved in tantric sex also can be applied to shortening the refractory period, such as belly breathing. And you can also delay your orgasm with belly breathing, obviously. So just inhaling and then exhaling, and the belly stays out instead of the diaphragm. And this is a technique anybody can look at online. But this can not only delay a male orgasm if he would like to last longer, if he has a little bit of what he considers premature, which is a label that's
missing. See, that's another bad word. That's another label. That's like performance. And I'm going to get to you. Trust me. You know, this whole idea, and I was thinking about this the other day, you know, why do I hate the word performance? Well, because I don't want to consider myself as a performer, you know, because for every performer, there's a critic. So why should the man be the performer and the woman be the critic? That's a bad word. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you put, you know, performance anxiety and performance pressure, well, stop performing.
That's
Start
right.
working with
Let's
your partner.
Be together.
Start having fun. Yeah.
Be.
So it shouldn't. Yeah. So we need a better word. Partner.
I love this,
not
Greg.
Performer.
I love this idea, and you've said this before, and I always love it. I agree with you, and it puts the emphasis on like the action and the goal and am I good enough versus let's just connect and breathe and look each other's eyes and raise our oxytocin levels and be together. And hey, whatever happens, happens. Maybe we orgasm, maybe we don't. Maybe we end up trying something new and laughing and cuddling.
Yeah.
I mean, there shouldn't be these expectations. I agree.
Yeah, and get rid of the idea that somebody is good in bed. You know, there are no good individuals in bed. There are only good partnerships in bed. So you're only as, quote, good as the person you're with and the person that you care about. And together, you're good in bed, or together, you're not good in bed. But the idea that one person is and the other person isn't, unless you got a total, you know, slug, you know, that's a little
bit
different.
But I agree. No,
but for the most part,
everyone is good in bed. Everyone is good in bed, because I think of that Tina Fey on 30 Rock one time. I used to love that show 30 Rock with Alec Baldwin. Mm-hmm. So funny. And Tina Fey was an interesting woman in terms of her romantic preferences. And she was basically, I just want someone to lay on. Well, she said, I just want someone to lay on the couch with and watch shows. I don't want to get involved in all the cuddling and the sex. She said, I just want to hang out. And she just wanted to lay under a blanket with someone, and I won't say what she said, but it was what she just wanted to be very
is this one
casual.
Thing you, everything you said on the show, and you won't say what Tina said on Tina Fey said on TV.
Well, she said, I just want to lay and fart under a blanket and watch shows with somebody.
With
and
somebody
so
else? That's
not
going to work. Yeah.
I know. Well, it would for someone. So there's someone for everyone is what we're getting at here, that would appeal to a man maybe with low libido, that's maybe a gamer. I'm not trying to stereotype, but I'm just there's someone for everyone, right?
let's get Bianchi in the conversation here. Bianchi, you had a point.
Well, the difference is that the female curl their toes more than the male.
Oh, explain.
I don't know if I do that, actually.
Well, you have to watch next time.
Take note.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Yeah, they flex and curl their toes when they have orgasms. That's a female more so than male.
So, would that be the fake orgasm test? That if women don't curl their toes, then you can say, you're faking it, or that must have been a good one. Is it like a toe curling quotient? I'm going to mix my words up today. And this is fascinating. I love
I don't know that everyone curls their toes, but this is a good question.
Bianchi, do you have non-toe curling observations? I'm just curious. Maybe I shouldn't ask personal questions. I shouldn't ask personal questions on this show. But I'm just, where did that come from, Bianchi? Where is your knowledge on this or source or something?
Well, it's from head to toe. So the impact is from head to toe, and the women curl their toes to the point where they cramp them sometimes.
To the point where
I don't think it's everyone, but I think it's definitely a thing. I don't know that it's every woman. Mm-hmm.
Well, which raises a really fascinating question. Are there physical signs that someone's had an orgasm? I mean, men, pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, men can have dry orgasms. This is very interesting with a refractory period. The dry orgasm for a man is possible, and then he can have several and then also have his ejaculatory orgasm, which is like the big one. So this is another thing that can be practiced, not to get off our stream of topic, but
there
I'm
no
thinking about
of
it.
Topic.
Not, there's no there's it's a little different than the wet orgasm for a man, but it's still very pleasurable. And there's also, you know, the prostate orgasm, which is probably a little controversial, but
what's a prostate orgasm? I thought prostate caused all of them. Isn't the prostate where your fluid is that gets released?
Yeah, and this is similar to the dry orgasm in that you can stop the flow of ejaculatory fluid so that you don't have that big. Yeah, so that can be stimulated.
What, you're backing
by
up the plumbing?
Is
that a safe thing to do? Why would you want to do that?
It's okay. It's okay because you do back up plumbing when you
says
edge
the woman.
Also. So, well, no, this, yeah, right. You'll go. You just need to go ahead and do it, okay?
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah,
last
yeah.
a little longer.
Go ahead, guys. You know, stop your fluid. It's okay, the woman says. All right.
Well, the same thing happens when you, similar when you edge. So getting to the point of orgasm, I love this conversation because I had it recently with a 29-year-old friend of mine, a male who's very sexual, and so he's fun to talk to, and I can ask him anything. He's so open, and I love it because that age group is just so horny. And
yeah, they
so,
don't care. They're well. Are they doing it or talking about it? I hear kids aren't having sex as much.
Almost.
So, Okay.
Well, they're doing both, and the girls are much more willing these days in that age group, not to stereotype, but it seems to be real. And
I was born at the wrong time, then.
Yeah, so I love talking to him. He's like my mini interviewee.
Bring him on the show.
But...
Bring him on the show, anonymously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a little generational stuff here.
You might blow our minds a little.
That's okay.
So the things they do.
This is
so
a sex
fun.
Report. What's out of bounds here?
So, yeah, so edging. So it was just coming to the edge of the orgasm, you know, and then not quite ejaculating and doing that multiple times. And,
okay.
Yeah, that can be great for the practice of semen retention also, which has wonderful physical and spiritual benefits. But in talking about blocking the flow.
I was wondering where you were going with that one.
Not today's topic. Happy to do it another day.
No,
blocking the flow
of
fluid.
That's another topic, yeah. Right.
Yes. So it's an ancient practice to put the fingers at the base of the penis right before ejaculation to squeeze, and you can kind of press the pads of the fingers at the underneath of the shaft in the softer part, you know, the muscular part right there underneath the shaft, and kind of put the thumb on top and at the right time block the orgasm and then go longer. So that's real, and that's not harmful. It's okay. I don't know if you'd want to do it every single time.
Well,
but,
how do they know that's not harmful? It's like, you know, it's like guys that have vasectomies, you know, that all of a sudden their sperm is cut off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you know they're not
this
backing up
point,
in the
actually.
Tubes and doing and destroying, you know, the testes because you've all of a sudden – see, anytime I hear about blocking or constricting
mm-hmm.
or
that's right.
it's like those stomach things where they put constrictions on your stomach so you don't eat as much.
I agree.
All this kind of extra – I don't – you know, the human body was made to you know, get rid of certain things, you know, at the right time. And if you're having sex, you know, to block that when the whole force of your body is into, you know, releasing this fluid seems to me counterintuitive,
okay.
unhealthy.
I would agree. I agree with you. I would say mm-hmm. this, it's happened from the beginning of time. It's not a new trick. And it's like blocking
well, so a circumcision, but I don't think that's a good idea either.
Well, okay. I would say circumcision's more recent in history, and that's dating back what post agricultural revolution. It wasn't happening prior to the agricultural revolution, but I think it's probably like a sneeze. So yeah, every single time, no. But hey, every now and then, okay. And you can block your own ejaculatory. You can block your ejaculation just by Kegel muscles too. So nobody even has to. With enough practice for a man. You don't need anybody to put their fingers down there. You can actually
do men have
use
Kegel
your own
muscles?
Musculature.
I thought that was a woman thing.
Pelvic floor muscles, the taint, you know, that whole area.
Oh, the taint. Okay, so that you're going to have to – we need a dictionary. We need a sex dictionary. Let me go to Pianki again because he wanted to make a comment too. Then we'll get back to our new words.
You know, in the temples and tombs in Egypt to go back over 5,000 years, you see pitch paintings of men being circumcised. So
mm-hmm.
that's been going on more than just recent. But on another case, too, women like the feel of sperm being ejaculated to them during the time that they have an orgasm. And if you look at the head of a penis, this design, when it sometimes penises enter the cervix and it's locked, and it won't be released until the man, loses hardness. It's sort of like the... That's what that crown is with the ridge. It locks in a cervix for those that can travel that far.
Oh, this is a whole interesting topic. Dorothy? The sex lock? I've never heard of the sex lock. This sounds interesting.
Can we expand on that just a tiny bit? Because
I don't know. Bianchi brought it up. This is an interesting topic.
That's why the penis has a crown. A ridge right beneath the head before it extends down into the shaft. And when those that penetrate the cervix, it locks in the cervix. And then the women have those convulsive orgasms where they shake like the exorcist is going on or something. You never experienced that?
I'm not quite sure.
I don't really think I would have
a male ever entered your cervix.
I
don't personally experience a lot of ejaculation without condoms. So my level of experience on that is pretty low.
Yeah, I want to make kind of a cautionary thing for all of us here, that because we talk about some very personal topics here, that I want to try not to ask, you know, I'm trying myself not to ask direct questions of other people. You don't want to reveal.
Been having sex a lot longer without condoms before they invented condoms. I mean, it's realistic.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of condoms, and that's a whole other topic, but I think it's a very intimate, very personal ejaculation without a condom, and there's STD reasons as well as, you know, others, but...
Yeah, but the whole cervix idea, cervix is pretty far up there. So you've either got, women parts have different lengths as guy parts have different lengths. And if you have longer guys and
women
shorter
parts,
women,
definitely,
then the cervix thing could be an issue. But I don't know, I'm just curious.
Absolutely can be an issue. And the cervix can move up and down as well during sexual arousal. And it's a muscle, so it's a little flexible. But, yes, there are height differences. So taller women tend to have taller vaginal canals, right?
Say that again?
And so
taller women?
Taller women tend to have taller vaginal canals. That's not across the board, but they tend to physiologically. And so, you know, a lot of tall men, my male friends are attracted to tall women, and I think there's something probably instinctive about that, you know, sexually.
Because the parts match up better, the canal and the man part?
Possibly.
You know, are of a compatible length? Well, cervix seems to me beyond where most people be having sex, so this is kind of a new thing.
The different sex positions can kind of lengthen the vaginal canals. If you have a penis vaginal canal mismatch, there's certain positions positions that make it
name
shorter,
them.
Right?
Name and them for our folks that are interested.
I feel like experimentation is actually the best way because all of our bodies are different. But you know,
cop out.
Right, really it is. And a woman will tell you she can feel it, obviously. She can say, oh, I can feel it, and then just try changing positions. But, you know, like if you're face-to-face and legs up on shoulders, you can tend to be able to penetrate a little deeper, yeah, that way.
Okay.
So if it's painful, she can put her legs down and we know that there's doggy style, right?
So you didn't think you'd be talking about all this on the show, did you? You know, this is why it's such
different.
A fascinating report. Yeah.
I was
telling you
the refractory theory, but we'll get back there.
Oh, yeah. This is the fun of our discussions because you never know where we're going to go.
So much fun.
Because every time you say something, I need a new definition. It's like, what are you talking about? See, you know the sex words. I mean, and we don't know all the sex words, but the whole cervix thing.
Yeah.
I think that would be painful to get that far and you know, bump into for guys that, you know, run into a cervix. Wouldn't that could cause problems and pain as opposed to a penetration thing?
For the woman or for the man?
Well, both maybe. I don't know.
It doesn't. For a woman, she can feel it, but it's a soft muscle. It's not hard. And for a man, I've never heard of a man objecting to that whatsoever. But we can have your other male guests speak to that if you'd like.
Oh, Pianki's a regular. He's on the show all the time, which is great.
Jackie, yeah. So, we want to talk about. I want to just reflect this. Is it painful?
Back to you.
Is it harmful to block the sperm? I don't see any evidence of that. I haven't heard any evidence of that. But again, I agree with you that scientific evidence is frequently lacking and it might stand to like common sense or intuitive sense that blocking the sperm isn't great. But it's such a practice that's been going on so long and we haven't seen any bad side effects that,
people
who do this regularly, because Tantra, they frequently delay ejaculation and this is an ancient practice. And there have been no significant anecdotal or scientific side effects, negative side effects. So,
Well, you know, what's interesting is that younger guys can do it more often, but older guys can do it longer. So how does that fit into the whole thing?
Well, that's interesting. Can do it longer, and that depends on your partner's perspective if that's a benefit or not, right? Some women who orgasm more
quickly,
you know, rather quickly.
The guys like, I'm not done yet. Well, see, this is a great reversal because it's usually like you always hear about the guys, you know, being over with more quickly, and the women like, oh, what's going on here? What if the guys say,
bummer,
I'm not done yet? You know, get back here. I'm not done.
I mean, I've had friends whose husbands will go on for an hour.
Hold on, Pianki. All right, let's one at a time. Who wants to go first?
Here,
Pianki. Pianki, you go first.
Older males lose their sensitivities of the nerves. That's why come they do it longer. Believe me, an older man don't want to be engaged in nothing no longer than anybody else. They like to hurry up and get it over with so they can get back to the football game.
Yeah, see, I knew there was a reason I didn't watch football, but that's another story. Dorothy?
Well, the science behind why an older person can last longer is a little bit up in the air. There's theories, but it's
you
not.
Man.
We're talking
about men here, right?
Yeah, men.
I mean, do women last longer? I mean, I don't think that's a, you know, I'm curious.
With women, mm-hmm. other things with women affect their ability to orgasm and the time frame, and it's usually genetic and how relaxed they are, how close they are to the partner. And mm-hmm. there can be physical reasons and hormonal reasons. But the more I research this, the more I just have this sense that the energetic and hormonal reasons and food and diet and lifestyle are the big factors affecting any perceived problems, right? The relationship problems, health, relationship issues, self-esteem issues. It just seems like it comes back to that. And we have all these drugs for enhancing performance and keeping erections longer. And I really
get
the
right
side
partner.
Eye to a lot of those.
Get the right partner. It's not a problem.
I feel like get the right partner and get right with yourself and relax. Relax and have the right attitude. And then if there is physical problems, you can address them really with diet, lifestyle, and self-esteem, self-confidence, perspective changes, things like that. But, so back to men can last a little longer as they get older, and then they cannot have an orgasm. You know, sometimes 12 to 24 hours once you're in your late 40s is very normal. And then once you're in your 60s, 70s, maybe 24 hours to 3 or 4 days, maybe even once a week after age 70.
Well, that's
and
a
again,
depressing
that's,
thought.
And that's an average. That's not true for everybody, right? And other things affect that, as we talked about, testosterone levels and smoking and alcohol and all these things. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. If you don't use it, you lose it. That plays out. Man should have at least, I say, 3 orgasms a week. That's good for the prostate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard about prostate too. 21 times a month is some figure I read on a men's health thing way back when. You know, guys need to have an orgasm at least 21 times a month to maintain good prostate health, which raises the question for guys that aren't having so much sex. You're in a sexless marriage or a sexless relationship, which to me should be immediately removed, you know, from. You need to leave that situation. But
it's
for guys that are
problem.
In a position. Yeah, but for guys that are in a position of having a partner without sex, you know, that they're actually it's unhealthy. It literally is biologically, physically unhealthy.
It's unhealthy for both.
For the prostate.
For both.
Another. Yeah. All right, so how about women that don't have sex? Do women have to have a certain amount of sex to maintain basic health also? It's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question, and I believe so because of our need for the oxytocin levels from cuddling and touching. And, I mean, once oxytocin doesn't get fed enough, that impacts your whole health and your spiritual health, your mental health, your physical health. And, you know, my guess is if you're cuddling a lot with your partner, you're probably going to also be having sex. I mean, there would be a serious physical reason why you wouldn't. If the cuddle relationship is intact, right, usually the sexual relationship is intact, unless
there's
a physical
both.
Problem.
You know, you have cuddle, then you have sex, then you cuddle, then
so
you have sex, and you know.
Yeah, you're probably not, if you're not having sex, you're probably not touching your partner either, and there is huge health ramifications to not being touched regularly, period.
Like what? Let me get Pianki's question, then I want to come back to that. I want to come back to touch and
well,
oxytocin.
Go ahead, yeah.
Pianki,
what was
your, get you back in here. Yeah, no, okay.
Sex is actually, I would say about 70% is in the mind, because I don't care, if you see a good-looking woman, you're going to look at her, and then I like to cuddle. You come up from behind and grab them, cup their breasts, and nuzzle my nose and their neck and all this stuff. It's really fun.
You're such
That's
a romantic.
That's really so romantic. That's so sweet. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And he's right. And women like that. I mean, a lot of women. And that kind of touching, it's both sexual and romantic. It's both affectionate and sexual, which is exactly the key, right?
Well, see, I never make a distinction. And this is the thing. I think guys make a mistake when they compartmentalize. You know, you're having sex, you're not having sex. You know, you're cuddling, you're not cuddling. You know, you're you know, sitting together and talking. You know, to me, it's all, you know, flirting, cuddling, sex, it's all a continuum. It's all a dynamic.
That's right.
You know, yes, and not having, you know, to me, if, you know, you know, girlfriend, partner, I'm just like, you know, the sex is like a constant, whether you're talking about it, doing it, thinking about it, you know, nuzzling, cuddling, you know, before stuff, after stuff, the whole,
it
it's all one big continuum.
It is a rich, giant world. Yes. Yeah. So here's a question. Can we say we have a good sex life if we do not have penetration, perhaps, or orgasm? Like, can you qualify your sex life? And I can answer
you're compartmentalizing
from a different perspective.
Again. I mean, a sex life is part of a good life.
Correct.
So if you if you compartmentalize the sex life, you know, it's like something I was thinking about, we were talking about earlier with Piaki made a great point about sex being mostly mental, you know, especially if guys are lasting longer. The woman says, oh, aren't you through yet? Is a completely different statement than, honey, take all the time you want. You know, so there's two completely different reactions. Now, how's the guy going to feel? Okay. So now you've got a situation where the mental conditioning or the comments of one partner to another can completely change the situation. So I believe there's so much mental.
Yes.
Going on there.
Yeah,
that's
please
I believe sex is.
Say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't say the wrong name.
If a man feels like you are dissatisfied, you're rushing him, or mm-hmm. you really need him to last longer, so this is where going with the flow and the breathing and the trusting the moment and not having expectations is, again, hugely mm-hmm. important. And again, this is more of a tantric lean, but I think mm-hmm. it's also intuitive for a lot of us, right? So. Mm-hmm. You start having expectations and telling him what you need and want. I mean, in a certain way, obviously, you know, in a expectation way, it can really destroy the moment.
Hmm.
Yeah, you got to have a full body contact with the female, your stomach to her stomach, and the motion up and down. It, all those things come into play here, Greg. Mm-hmm. And I tell you something else. My wife, I used to tease her and just tease her over a couple of days without going any further than that. And you could see the impact it was having. And
she wanted you.
Time comes, you do.
She wanted you big time.
Yeah, when the time comes you do have sex, then the orgasm that she has is completely off the scale.
I wonder if we should get her on the show.
mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking, yeah, that's fascinating. No, actually, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's like distance makes the heart grow fonder or something like that, whatever it is. You know, the time away and you come back together, it's like, whoa, this is great. You know, it's like people meet after a business trip or someone has to go away or a deployment or whatever it is. You know, those things make a big difference. But, yeah, people, again, back to the idea of compartmentalizing versus a continuum. I think couples will be more successful thinking on a continuum of a flow, of a dynamic, you know, moving up and down. Literally in some cases, as opposed to a compartmentalization where you're doing this for this moment and you're doing this for that moment. And there's like this split here. And every time you compartmentalize, you interrupt the action. And I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes out there.
And I think
same thing with
porn.
Kissing. Mm-hmm. The same thing with kissing. Some women, you kiss, she likes to get a little tongue. Not too much where you're gagging her. Trying to go on an exploration, but just a little. And you reach around, you squeeze their buttocks. You'd be surprised. Women love to have their butt squeezed.
Well, let's find out, Dorothy.
I was just thinking when you're saying compartmentalizing, I feel like porn also serves to compartmentalize sex in our minds, like if there's a lot of porn watching, because you're not seeing, again, different than maybe feminist or erotica, where there's a storyline and there's a buildup and there's a relationship sometimes, and women tend to like that kind of porn better. But the typical porn that's out there does compartmentalize, and it makes the act itself and the orgasm itself and these very specific acts the primary goals and focus, right? Whereas as you and I are talking here on the show, we are agreeing that that is actually not the case, that a healthy sex life is very hard to define. It's whatever the couple says it is, and it may not involve, I'm going to say, penetration or orgasm frequently. It may not involve that, and that's okay.
Yeah, but it may a whole bunch of times, too. So
it may
again,
also, and it depends on the
couple.
And the sex drug industry has really, really corrupted our idea of good sex life also. Women over 50 and 60 frequently don't have, you know, the vaginal lubrication. Sometimes they don't have the desire for a man that lasts a long time and is rock hard all day. Sometimes they might, but frequently they don't. And so to put all the focus on that doesn't really address the needs of everyone. It maybe addresses the needs of that you know, 16 to 30-year-old male only, right?
Why is that an age group? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I'm thinking the age group that wants to do it over and over and really wants to orgasm and really is focused on the act itself and that goal of the orgasm. So that mentality, stereotyping that age group, you know?
Yeah. We talked about porn earlier, and it's like compartmentalizing. I mean, is there any good romantic comedy porn? I mean, I just thought of that just now.
Mm.
You know, put some real storylines in, but throw some porn in too. You know, I mean, they can make interesting stories, you know, sort of like combine romance
there
novels with comedy. And
Mm-hmm.
It's a romantic comedy porn,
yeah.
Which would be more, I'm not going to go into it, but anyway.
Well, I think that would be delightful, and I'm sure it exists. What I was more thinking of is porn that has storyline characters, romance, and that mm-hmm. exists. It doesn't get
and really great sex.
Get the media, and really beautiful sex, and it doesn't get the attention that the hardcore porn gets, and it doesn't get the, like, it's not as prolific. It's not there when you, if you research, if you go and Google, you know, something sexy like big tits or something, you're not going to usually come up with that kind of porn. You're just going to come up with the more, what we think of as porn, the more hardcore
act
ejaculation based.
Mm-hmm. We have movie critics. Why don't we have porn critics? Why don't people write about
sure
different
porn
kinds
critics.
Of porn? Can we talk
what about women's dress?
Well, hold on a second. I want to get this critic thing, because I think we could talk about that next week maybe. Maybe do some research on porn critics and see if people actually do analyze, you know,
let's
the different categories.
I want to be a porn critic.
You want to be a porn critic?
That sounds like a fun job.
Oh,
I would love
let's
to be
create
a
new profession for
critic.
You. Dorothy Diana, porn critic.
And then,
so, Dorothy,
yeah,
what are your movie reviews this week?
How fun would that be? And I would like to do it from a perspective of true sexual health, true relationship connection versus victimization and mythology that doesn't serve us well.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, now we got a new category for your show, porn critic. Pianki, you were going to make a point.
Now the next impression is the female dress. Now, me, myself, I always have preferred a female that wore a dress. Not one that's 2 inches below a crouch, an inch below a crouch, but actually they're stopping at the hemline, at the knee. And that there is more sexy to me than what I see women walking around practically naked. You know, the curiosity of and imagination of the mind is always more stimulating than, look, here it comes, there it is, and there it goes.
Well, that's
an interesting
point. It gets back to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So why are dresses sexier than pants to Pianki, for example? What do you think, Dorothy? It's an interesting point.
I agree. Well, the dress is very feminine. If he's a very masculine man, which I sense that he is.
Well, we can ask him. Pianki, are you a masculine man?
Oh, most definitely of a masculine man.
Definitely.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was easy.
Well, the dress has so many cultural connotations. And, you know, it's a woman, and it's modest, and it's feminine and alluring and different than a man. And, you know. I believe it's just probably cultural.
When I hug, I like to have a full body hug, not looking like two halves of an arch meeting.
Oh, the A-frame hug? Yeah.
What?
Well, the dress, let's talk about dresses. This is interesting. So Dorothy, do you find Scottish men in kilts attractive at all?
Well, again, back to the cultural thing. So I guess the only thing I find attractive about that, well, first of all, Scottish men, and here's a stereotype, tend to kind of be masculine also, which I like. And and they have the coloring I kind of like, but also the idea that they're not wearing underwear under it.
Oh. And how would you know?
There's nothing wrong with that's the knowledge, right? I think that's pretty traditional, right? They don't wear.
So
that's
the commando Scots?
Have it wrong, but I thought they didn't wear underwear. We need a Scot to call in and let us know.
Well, you watch Braveheart. The battle scenes, you can tell. But
from
anyway,
a different angle. Oh, that's an idea for a porn. Braveheart from a different angle.
Braveheart porn? There we go. Kilt porn.
Well, the camera down of the ground. Okay. I don't know. It just popped in my head.
Well, that's the fun of this whole hour is that we get to, you know, as the things pop into our head, we probably say things we'll regret 10 years from now, but right now it's really fun. Go ahead, Pianki.
When we was boys in high school, we'd tape a mirror to the toe of our shoe.
Oh, no.
See, was that the patent naughty, leather naughty. Shoes? That was the joke in Catholic school. They had to wear these patent leather shoes, and they're worried about them reflecting.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what bloomers are for? Girls used to wear bloomers.
We always wore shorts under our dresses. I was in Catholic school. We wore little shorts. We wore our gym shorts under our dresses and jumpers. Sorry, bummer, right?
Yeah, I think I think the bloomers and the panties look better than the G-strings. The G-strings look so ridiculous.
Oh, the thongs? Yeah.
Well, that's just off the panty line and pants. That's the purpose of those was so that you don't see the underwear line through pants. It's kind of a style, reason. But then I think it became sexy to some men because the buttocks are exposed.
Yeah. Interesting about the dresses. I always like hippie chicks, you know, with long hair and, you know, the bell-bottom jeans and, you know, the 60s look I always found really interesting. It's interesting. We do have different looks that appeal to us. It's quite fascinating. I mean, dresses are cool, but I don't know. It's the person there, not necessarily that, but this is the perceptions. Well, what are women like? Do you like, you know, men in three-piece suits or, you know, guys in construction jeans and work shirts?
I like all of it.
Okay.
It just depends on the mood. I think it depends on the mood, which, you know, and in the bedroom too, you can wear a beautiful white lacy lingerie or you can wear your black leather straps and that can add such a flavor. And same thing with, you know, out in the street, a man in jeans and a t-shirt can look just as good as a man in a suit. It just depends. It's just a different mood. It's a different look, right?
Okay.
If he keeps himself in shape, especially.
We can be sexy all the time, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course. It's your attitude, isn't it? Attitude and your physical, how you take care of yourself, mm-hmm. how you groom yourself, how you exercise. You have a glow about you and a happy glow that shows you're satisfied with yourself and feeling good. And then you put on whatever you want. If you look like you care at all, you know, you have to try, get some effort probably, but yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Just
did you want to get back to your original topic?
Oh,
what's that now?
Women always looking at the bulge at the crouch. So
they're what now? Oh, they are? Are they staring at our man parts?
Women are always looking for a male bulge at his crotch. You ever see that deal on YouTube? On Facebook with the cucumber prank? A man puts a cucumber down in his pants and he approaches a woman that's casually sitting and start a conversation and the camera is on her eyes. She tries to stir every chance that she gets without being right out and noticeable.
Well, see, women do what guys do.
She might be
staring
because she's shocked, not because she wants it, you know? Not a lot of women do not want a large dick. That is a myth. I mean, if there's something sexy about the thought of it, and some women's bodies do need that. We're all built differently, but most women don't want a giant, monstrous penis. So, you know, it's just that it's fascinating, right? Fascinating to everyone, I think.
So the novelty aspect, but they don't. That's fascinating.
I mean,
okay.
It hurts. Yeah, it's painful. Mm. It can be painful, and then you can't really have sex as often because the vaginal tissues are delicate. You know, the mucosa can only withstand so much. So.
Well, that's the whole point. Mm. You know, yeah. So for the guys that are huge, that must be an issue. You know, the mythical porn star with the monster man part. You know, they can only have so much sex. There's only so far they can go. It's kind of interesting. I don't know.
The woman's womb get tilted. And is that the terminology? The womb is tilted, and she has to go to an obstetrician and a gynecologist, that is, and get that taken care of.
For being with the guy that was too big? Well, I guess you have to match up, though, don't you?
Well, you
I
mean, can be
like
born
a,
like that.
Isn't there an ideal... You know, whatever your size is matches up with somebody else's ideal size, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's good matches. Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, thankfully, the vagina is very elastic and very accommodating. So with enough stimulation and foreplay, and I mean, if you have a man that's larger and she's a little smaller, there's lots of things you can do to make it comfortable for her if you're not rushing into the penetration act, right? Mm-hmm. And then if she's a little larger and he's more slight of build, there's positions and, you know, and I'm sure we all know these, but, you know, keeping the legs together in certain spooning positions where there's a little more grab, the vagina has a little more grab on the penis. Yeah. So, I mean,
well, that's,
I
you're talking
like
about those
Kegel
muscles again or something like that. Isn't that what those are for?
Well, yeah, Kegels. Kegels are great for tightening after there's been some, like, vaginal birth, some, you know, some
situation that happened with the vagina where it's a little different than it was prior, a little more lax. Kegels can be great.
But
I mean, I hate them personally, and I think most women do. But and okay. There's also surgeries, you know. And I mean, there's a huge market for the vaginoplasty to, you know, if there was an episiotomy during birth or a lot of vaginal births and a lot of changes, you know, it's not too major of a surgery to go in and make it a little back to normal, like refurbishment, right?
Well, how much do vaginas change after childbirth? I mean, is you know, if you know, sex didn't happen
the,
after childbirth, you don't have one kid.
Benoit ball. The women still use the Benoit ball, B-E-N-W-A-H ball.
Yeah, I'll take that one first and get back to my question, yeah.
Benoit ball. What was your question, Greg? Because you were both talking at the same time. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Panky, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I asked, do women still use those apparatus, the Benoit balls? Do you know about them?
I think that's a wonderful tool. If that's fun for you in bed and you want to practice outside of bed, tightening yourself on Benoit balls, why not? I'm sure it's very useful. I think most practitioners recommend Kegels without inserting an object necessarily, just Kegels, pelvic floor exercises without an object for the average woman. But you know, Benoit balls is a great tool if that works for you. They still exist.
Yeah, the Benoit balls were inserted, by the way. The first ones. I don't know what they use. I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's, in this conversation, there's a lot that can be discussed, you know, from the live human being to now they've got the androids, that female androids, and also the male androids that have mobility in the hips. So it's a lot that can be discussed.
I remember this topic from last week, I think. That was a very interesting topic that was brought up last week, the robotic sex dolls. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep going back to the Stepford Wives. You know, you still got a robot. If you don't know you're with a robot, then you've got some other, you've got mental health issues we need to talk about. But the childbirth thing and the change in women, you know, for sex after childbirth. You know, do women worry about that? Do guys worry about that? Do
they do?
You know,
women definitely worry about that. Mm-hmm.
You know, but if that was a problem, mm-hmm. women would only have one kid, and the sex would be gone or different or something like that. So obviously, you know, women having multiple kids, obviously, sex after kids, it's there.
A few things happening here. One, there are some changes that occur in the vagina after childbirth for most women, but they're usually pretty minor. Okay, so if we, you know, one day we might talk about the childbirth experience in America, but it is pretty traumatic in the hospital usually, and the rates of episiotomy and the rates of tearing in the vaginal area, in the perineum, are much increased in the hospital than they are in home birth, and that's a fact, and there's many scientific reasons. Well, there's a lot of
people behind
that.
Yeah, we need to explore that in detail.
An excellent book, I'm going to throw it out there, an excellent book for any woman who is interested in that topic is Ina May Gaskin's Spiritual Midwifery. And Ina May Gaskin, she ran the farms down in Tennessee, and it's a big kind of communal co-housing community. But she's a midwife, and she trains midwives. And they were very kind of secretive and under the radar for a long time, but her C-section rate was so fraction compared to the rest of the U.S., the OBGYNs, it was so tiny. She was accused of basically lying and you know, kind of covering up. She was an open book, and she invited anyone to come witness her practices and how they deliver babies. Well, because it was shown that, yes, she's legit, and she has this incredibly almost non-existent C-section rate, the OBGYN community became very interested in what she was doing. So she wrote papers, she wrote a book, she started going to conferences. But in a nutshell, the practices inside the hospital lead to trauma, the woman's physical trauma, period. They, from the moment you walk in the door, what happens is not a birth experience that is kind to the baby, the mother, or the vagina, or the uterus. It's just money. It's a lot of money. And it's not the OBGYN's fault. They're trained surgeons. They're just doing what they were taught. But to make a long story short, the tearing from a traumatic vaginal birth isn't really part of our history. And people go back and say, well, women used to die in childbirth. Yes, but it was rare. And when you get midwives involved and true ancient knowledge of childbirth that's been around time eternal, those are very rare. I mean, a skilled midwife is, I mean, it's incredible what they can do. I had a baby turned around by a skilled midwife. I had a breech baby turned around beside me. And, you know, that wasn't even
that's
that
unusual.
This was in California. Yeah. Well, so we're told that birth is very dangerous, and we have these mythologies, and I'm not going to get into that right now. But if there's been a traumatic birth and the vagina has changed significantly, there are surgeries or exercises we can do, and there's a lot of accommodations we can do, but preventative is probably the best. So an excellent childbirth for women, an excellent non-traumatic childbirth is the best preventive, and that's possible to have that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not so many places where you actually need, you don't need hospitals very often. Midwives can do, you know, but you need a hospital standing by, I guess, just in case something does go wrong. But for the most part, what percentage of births do you think could occur in homes with midwives? 50%, 70%? What do you
think? I
think
much higher than that. So, and again, now we're multifactorial. So we're talking about the health of a woman also.
Hold on, Pianki. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get a handle on this one. Like
90%?
Yeah, they help it.
So if you have a healthy woman, you also have to take into play this factor. If you only show girls and women, if all they see is traumatic and hospital births from the time they're little, and they don't feel like they have an option, they've never seen a healthy home birth, they've never seen a healthy natural birth, in their mind, they literally have a very hard time with that first birth actually accepting that this is okay and safe. So it's a huge psychological thing. When you have fear, the cervix is a muscle like the anus, right? So I always say, like, if you're sitting on the toilet trying to have a poop and people keep walking in and saying, oh, how's it going? And strangers walking in and bright lights, and you're probably not going to go, right?
Yeah.
Same with the cervix. So you're laying in a hospital bed and you don't really know what's happening. It's your first birth. You're nervous. You haven't seen natural home births. You haven't seen women happily in labor using their bodies, very empowered, without fear, in different positions, being supported in a really great way. And all you're doing is saying, I'm going to try to have this naturally. I mean, the odds are against you psychologically. I mean, you're not going to have the support in the hospital you need, first of all, because they're uninformed. And your whole body is in fear, and the cervix is now clenched. So the setup against a woman doing this in a lovely way is pretty significant. So, like, I'm just trying to, the psychological factors for women in our culture, the barrier to a great birth is huge. And I would love to see that changing. I invited all the daughters of my friends to my home birth. I said, bring them by, please. Let them see me walking around making a cake. Let them see me with my tub. Let them see there's a choice, right? Because then they'll have a choice when they're older. That was my spiel. Thank you.
No, it makes perfect sense. It's something we should explore more. I think Pianki had a comment on that, but yeah.
Well, women squatted when they had the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Egypt, you got what's called the Mizi house, and they got paintings and carvings on the wall showing a woman squatting in the Mizi house. Mizi means birth, born. In the West Africa, they got the squatting stools where you practically sit down on the floor. But no, they squatted when they had birth. And also, Greg, the vinegar and honey douche would tighten the vagina back up like an old prune.
The things you know, you never cease to amaze me with the things that you know, Pianki. This is fascinating. So,
I don't know what the science is behind that, but I wouldn't actually be surprised. I mean, apple cider vinegar, I'm always shocked. It literally treats almost everything. And I don't want to say
really
that sounds insane. But I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't researched the vinegar and honey, but I know at-home douches you can make yourself, vaginal washes with certain ingredients, very healthy after, you know, certain sexual encounters where there's a lot of maybe fluid exchange. The vagina is very sensitive. It likes a certain balance. It gets kind of irritated if you mess with it too much. So if you're having a lot of sex, and I'm just speaking to the comment on vinegar and honey, there are definitely at-home washes you can make, depending on what you think your needs are, that I would recommend before any of the things you're going to buy at CVS or these pharmacies, you know. And vinegar is probably, I remember apple cider vinegar, a few drops of it, very beneficial to combat, say, like bacterial vaginosis or a pH disrupt. Yeah.
Probably yogurt.
You know, the
bacteria.
The vinegar,
you know,
and honey
lots of yogurt.
And water is good for your asthma also.
Yeah, the manuka honey and the raw honey. Mm-hmm.
between honey, apple cider vinegar, and yogurt. There's really not too much you can't cure.
Really?
By taking those regularly.
Yeah,
interesting.
I'm
going to let you go a couple minutes early. I want to play something. We got Michelle Saltzman, who's a state representative from Florida. She's running for a second term. She'll be coming up at the top of the hour here. And so I want to get a chance to play a couple
things.
We want
to keep her on time, yeah.
Yeah, I do. And,
well, I'm
going to
post on
fun.
I'm going to post on your Facebook page I'm going to post a little bit about refractory period and things men can do to shorten it if they like, and a little hormonal stuff involved.
Yeah,
also.
Last longer or do it more often, guys. That's what you want to do.
If you'd like to, if your partner.
Well, I
like
mean, it's always
that,
voluntary.
Right?
Well, sometimes it's involuntary. Yeah. I think sometimes your body has different ideas. You know, the guy might want to do it, you know, 15 times, and the body says, "What are you crazy?"
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I think your mind
just
wanting to is half the battle.
Say that again.
Right, being having desire and having your mind want you to is half the battle. Like
absolutely.
Like we talked about earlier, the mental
stop
state
battling.
Half the
yeah.
battle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have a life and health coaching page. It has expanded with our Wild Women of Wellness Wednesday. We've got Dorothy Diane on it and Jean Ferning, our life coach. So we got a pretty good page here of all kinds of new things. And so it's pretty interesting what's happening as far as that goes. Anyway, any contact information you want to do or websites, things like that, other than that? And then I want to play a couple minutes worth of stuff and then I'll talk to Michelle when she calls in.
I will post, my website's under construction now. I've completely refurbished it. But I will post on my Facebook and I'll post on yours, the resources that will be helpful.
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's do it next week. We may or may not have 10 minutes of Spanish news. I'm really sure. But we shall see. In fact, I think Michelle's on the line now. I might just forego my other thing and play it later. Yeah, she's on the line right now. So, Dorothy, thank you so much. Let's do it again next week.
It's been lovely as always. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, too. Bianca, if you want to stick around, feel free. I'm going to bring on Michelle Saltzman, who is a state representative in the great state of Florida that we were in. Let me quickly scroll back up here, give her a round of applause. And here we go. See all the fun we have here? So Michelle was on about a year or so ago. Michelle's running for a seat here. I think it's Escambia County. You can tell us the exact borders of it. Michelle is one of my favorite guests of all time because she absolutely challenged me last time. We had a roaring discussion about something, and I forgot what we disagreed on, but just the fact that you didn't, you know, try to BS me as someone who's running for office and challenge me, I thought was really impressive in your integrity and the fact that you will say exactly what's on your mind. You're not trying to, you know, sneak through anything. And so I admired that, and I'm really glad to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being so patient with me. I know it took us a while to get me on here, but I'm excited to be here and excited about whatever it is that you have in mind.
I've got tons of things to talk about, but let's start with you. Let's get a little background on who you were before the legislature, what you're working on, and why you decided to run, and what happened in your first term. So let's kind of get folks acquainted with you, and then we can kind of proceed from there. So whatever you want to introduce.
Sure. So
yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm Michelle Saltzman. I am what was considered to be a community leader for about 15 years here in Pensacola, Florida, serving on dozens of nonprofit boards consecutively for more than 15 years now. I'm still on 7 currently, even as an elected official, but I just really was an advocate for children, for education, for veterans, for the disabled, and just working through that process with all these different boards and doing all the philanthropy in the community. I was seeing gaps in care, gaps in different things, and as we would talk about it in the organizations I was supporting, I learned that a lot of that stuff happened at the state level. And so just seeing 9 Mile Road and Highway 29, which are roads in my community, seeing them just not get any progress. They were just construction zones forever. You know, and I was on the phone with a good friend of mine, D.C. Reeves, and I was like, D.C., I'm so sick of this road. I'm late to the doctor's appointment with my son. It's all backed up. And he said, Michelle, you know, you could just run for office. And I was like, run for office. He said, yeah, that's the state representative. Just put your name out there. We'll do it. And I was like, okay, you know what? Fine. I'll do it. And, you know, I mean, that's literally how it went down. And
wow.
It's been a fun ride ever since. Of course, 9 Mile Road and Highway 29, it only took me 6 months after being elected to get all of that construction completed that was sitting there for years. And we just started a new phase on Nine Mile Road, but it's a small one. It's a widening at the other end, totally different spot. But point is, I ran to get things done. I said, you know, nothing is happening over here at the state level in my community, and I really want to see some progress, not bills filed just so I can tell everybody I filed that bill. And, you know, I want action. I don't want words. And so
well,
I knocked
right
on 14,000 doors. Yeah, and we did it. We won. And my progress was notable. I said I wanted to focus on safety, infrastructure, education, and health care, you know, our first responders, the things that the government should be focused on. And I did that and passed a ton of legislation, brought back millions and millions and millions of dollars, and got lots of really cool stuff done. Even had some Medicaid reimbursement rates updated, and I mean, just some cool stuff.
State?
We've done a lot.
I thought that was a federal thing. Isn't Medicare federal or is that state?
Medicare is federal and Medicaid is state.
Okay.
So the healthcare is the highest part of the budget, and I serve on the Healthcare Appropriations Committee. I was part of the team that wrote the healthcare budget for the past 2 years, which is over $40 billion. Florida is the third largest economy in America and 15th largest in the world.
Wow. So where's our healthcare money go? What are some of the proportions that you have to where if you could divide up the healthcare budget, what are the major areas that you're spending money on?
Major areas are going to be hospitals, emergencies, you know, the nursing home facilities. A lot of money goes into nursing home facilities.
But don't we pay insurance? People pay health insurance to cover those things. What are you spending money on that's not covered
Medicare,
by health insurance?
Medicare is for people that can't buy health insurance.
But I know nursing homes are prohibitively expensive, but I'm just thinking, is the state building nursing homes or are they, what are
actually,
they doing
we,
that, that,
we
that
do,
insurance doesn't do?
We are building VA nursing homes.
Okay.
So we get matching dollars from the federal government, and then we put in money from the state, and you know it's a hodgepodge of money. But we invest in just about any healthcare infrastructure, especially those that have matching dollars. So a majority of it is the actual cost of care under Medicaid, and then I would say some others is the of course the nursing home facilities. If you're on Medicaid and you need to be in a nursing home, then we cover that. I mean, there's a waiting list in some areas not, but
we have an older population, that's a huge thing in terms of where the money goes.
Yes.
So that makes sense. But
right.
Aren't corporations, I mean, hospitals, we have Ascension Care here and the different hospital conglomerates.
They get a ton of money from the state.
So, but that's my question. I mean, shouldn't the hospitals be building their own hospitals? The hospital corporations shouldn't be doing that. I mean, we don't expect gas stations to build their own gas stations.
Gas stations don't provide care
it's not really
citizens
a good example,
that can't afford it that sign up. So understand that Medicare and Medicaid are government-ran insurance.
Okay.
It's government insurance. And we are required by law to have certain programs in place because the federal government supplements those certain programs.
Huh.
That's number one. So that there are some things that won't be removed because the federal government actually pays for them.
Okay.
Second thing you have to understand is the Medicaid reimbursement rates are not equivalent. They're less than 50% of what the actual cost of care is because the government's not in the business of doing health care. They're not supposed to be, right? So when you have an Ascension, which is a nonprofit, a Baptist, which is a nonprofit, those nonprofit hospitals need supplemental dollars to keep their hospitals going because they have Medicare patients that come in, and the Medicare covers it, but it doesn't cover the true cost of care. So then we also have to go in and say, okay, our patients, the one that the state government is insuring, providing you with equal dollars. So here is a little bit of extra money for you to cover whatever it is that you're doing in your hospital. It depends on the project, depends on the budget line item, but basically we give them a little bit extra at the end to compensate, which doesn't fully cover it. I'm just going to be honest with you. It doesn't come near the coverage of it, but that's the whole thing. You know, Rick Scott was in office and I wasn't here during that, so I can't get into the weeds of it, but Rick Scott was in office and he completely did Medicare all just like or Medicaid all over. I'm sorry, not Medicare, Medicaid. He just revamped it all, changed everything. We changed the reimbursement rates. We changed how the process goes. And since then, we haven't really went back in and made it where it was a system that you could actually understand. And if you were the average Joe, a majority of legislators don't even want to be on the healthcare committees because it's so convoluted. It's a rabbit hole most times. You don't really understand where the money's going, and it takes a lot of effort to really research and know what's best or what isn't best so we can be good stewards of the dollar. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we have two constitutional requirements, balance the budget and redistricting. So, which both of those things I've had the honor of doing my first term, but... So in those cases, it's so convoluted. I mean, I can't even pretend to be an expert in it. I've only been on those committees for 2 years, but I actually requested it. I said, I want to be on healthcare committees because if it's the largest part of the state's budget, I want to understand it because you really understand the true mission of any organization when you see where the money goes. So I want to follow the money.
Follow the money. That's what we all do. Is education the second biggest part of our budget? Is education buying healthcare?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So did you see places where there could be reforms or wastes or abuse or I'm talking big things that can be changed? Is this something that you can do something about that you discovered on the committee?
Well, the first thing that I can tell you that you take little pieces of the apple. You know, that's how you eat an elephant.
I take the big piece when I can. I mean, I'm well versed in that.
Right. So one thing we noticed in regions 1 and 2, which is where we live in the Panhandle, there was a 2-year waiting list for children to get diagnosed with autism because the Medicaid policy said that certain doctors, only certain doctors, could do that, and so. With a 6 months or so working with ACA, which is the Agency for Healthcare Administration, working alongside them very closely and just going through policy and going through waiting list numbers and cases. And we have managed to update the policy on Medicaid. So the 2-year waiting list that we have in the Panhandle should be diminishing pretty quickly just by changing policy. You know, another thing that we noticed was nursing homes try to take a majority of the money from the healthcare budget, not the top three, but a majority of the money. And every year they tell us the sky is falling, they need more money. The sky is falling, they need more money. And so as we ask them questions on the committees, you know, what do you need more money for? Where's your money going? We realized, and this is very sad but true, that the nursing homes were not required to submit audits to the legislature. So they were getting highly supplemented from us, in some cases fully funded, the public ones. But they weren't required to tell us where their money was going, but they were telling us the sky is falling and they need more money and people aren't getting care and, you know, these are our elderly and blah, blah, blah. So
but they always
last
want
year
more money.
We –
Every government agency wants more money. Yeah. Now, were they spending –
Well, we're not in the business of that.
Well, I know that, but here's the thing, too, that it's very common, especially in federal spending. It's probably just as common as state spending, that any agency will spend every dollar you give them because if they think they don't spend it, you're not going to give them as much next year. And that goes across the board. That goes so do you have any incentives? Are there any incentives for saving money, or do you just want to audit these people and make sure they're not gouging the next year? What's the best way to handle
that? Right. And so we recognized that a couple of years ago. So last year there was a bill filed, and I co-sponsored it, and it was passed. And it said nursing homes are required to submit audits annually. So now we haven't gotten the first audit back, but now we're going to be able to dive into that and really analyze, is this, you know, are they really spending their money the way they should be? You know, do they really need this extra money? Should we be shutting them down? You know, all the different things. So we are trying very hard. We're in a world of very conservative legislative body. We have a majority in the House and the Senate. And, of course, our executive branch is also Republican. So we are able to go in and really do some good conservative legislation. So I've been really fortunate to be a part of that and to really just – it's just so cool. It's so cool. You have a conversation and it's a bunch of conservatives going, that's not right. And we're all like, yeah, that's not right. And we're – how do we fix it? Okay, let's do this. and we do it.
Yeah, but
you know?
There are conservatives,
I mean,
and conservatives.
Clearly.
You know, there are moderate conservatives.
Oh, of course.
And there are real conservatives. So there's like, just because the label's there. And Florida, I think, has that's one of the problems is you have, you know, one version of the New Jersey Floridians have one version of conservative, and the Panhandle, you know, Tech Alabama, you know, conservatives that we have around here have a completely different idea of what a conservative is. So it's quite interesting. I'm sure what you see, the varieties. So, go ahead.
It is interesting, and I'll tell you that that's one of the things I have had to combat is that we have different types of Republicans, just like we have different types of Democrats, and not everybody is in the same, you know, 100% agreeance. But we're not in a cult here. We're not in a cult. Like, if you get 80% of agreement, then you're doing really good. And so the difference in the legislature currently is we're not compromising with liberal values. We're compromising among conservatives. So even if one conservative doesn't equal the other, and they don't, they certainly don't. My colleagues say I'm the top like three most Republican in the legislature because I'm just super far right. But even if you're compromising, it is who we are in the Panhandle. But even compromising with Republicans, so you're starting already on the right, you know, so you're already on the right side of things. So no matter what, you're going to have a conservative answer. So it's an interesting thing to be in a world of a bunch of conservatives where we're all having these conversations and we're negotiating with one another, as opposed to the alternative would be Republicans and Democrats equally having to compromise. So you might not land in such a conservative answer. But that's how we passed HB1, which was the riot bill, parental rights bill, the pro-life
bill. Let's talk about that one.
I mean,
yeah. Now, I wrote, I know you haven't a chance to look at it, but parental rights. There was a special legislative session last year, I think October or November. And I saw the bills that came out, and I actually wrote two. One was on parental rights, and the other was bringing the public health department under the Constitution so that we had fully informed consent and a bunch of other things. And so if you get a chance to look at those, I think my parental rights bill was a lot stronger because it took out all the places in law where it said parents have the right to, you know what the kids' health care is, except as prescribed by law. And it took out all those little exceptions. There were a bunch of exceptions in the law, and something you might want to take a look at for the next session, that talked about they had qualifications. It's like, well, this is a right, but
yeah.
And then they take away the
right.
Right,
we understand
with permission.
That. We had many conversations about parental rights and education, and this is just the tip.
Well,
I think you're
going
to see you're going to see legislation continue in that direction as long as we have. And that's the point I was making. We're in a full conservative body here. We're probably going to have a supermajority. It is predicted that we will take more seats in this upcoming November election, and that we will have a super majority in the legislature. So it will give us even more power. But currently we have a majority. So our conversations are conservative to conservative. I mean, we do have bipartisan bills. We do, because there are many conversations that are not partisan. You know, there are many things that we can do in the legislature that are not just for Republicans or just for Democrats. So we do reach across the aisle as often as we can because we represent every Floridian, you know. But in a world of where we're actually getting legislation moved, we're moving conservative legislation. And when you have all these conservatives in the room, your starting point is great, you know. So we are in such a great place.
Yeah. Let me ask you,
progress easier.
Yeah.
It's easier to make progress. Yeah,
and there's a couple of areas I want to talk about as we get going here. Let's talk about what happened yesterday. The raid on President Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate mansion. I'm not sure what it is. I haven't been there. But in terms of protecting Floridians from an oppressive federal government, and I don't know where you stand on this. I'm about to find out. As far as I'm concerned, we have an illegal government in the White House. They're illegally using the Justice Department. You've got political prisoners in the D.C. jail for people that were taking selfies in the Capitol on January 6th. And the fact that they can come into Florida and raid a former president who I believe is the current president's house, I want to know what you want to do at the state level to protect Florida citizens, because the 14th Amendment is very clear. Citizens of the United States are also citizens of the state in which they reside. And is this a tolerable situation for the Florida legislature to have a federal government raid a former president, I think current president, in the state of Florida? And do you want to put any restrictions on federal law enforcement operating within the state of Florida? Now, I don't expect you to have a whole plan on this because it just happened last night. But do you think
I don't have a whole plan on it, but I can give you my
what do you think initially?
My insight. Well, I can tell you that the response has been pretty clear from the state. I mean, I typically don't issue responses to things that happen like that on my social media or whatever. I certainly don't mind having conversations like this, you know, in interviews. Mm-hmm. But so I think the governor and the CFO, Jimmy Patronis, and all of our executive branch, as well as our leaders of the House and Senate, they have all expressed a true statement. You know, this is a disgrace. It's wrong. It's an abuse of power. I can't even articulate how upsetting it is to me that I mean, we didn't do this to Nixon, you know, I mean, we haven't,
oh, I know,
mean,
that.
What president has ever had this done? Like, this is a very, very big overreach. It doesn't matter what they find or what they don't find. At this mm-hmm. point, they completely took away the validity of anything they possibly thought they were doing, even if they thought they had something. Because nobody is going to believe a daggum thing that they say they found. I mean, nobody. People are going to look at that and go, first of all, you illegally entered the home. I don't care what warrant you had. Whatever you did, that was wrong. You know. Second of all, that all of the things that you're finding, if you're doing that, if you are infiltrating a former president's home, you know, you already clearly don't understand boundaries. So how can I anticipate true and fair whatever it is that you think you were doing? So mm-hmm. the validity of the conversation is gone from the moment they stepped foot. You know what I'm saying? So I'm very
Well, let's get to Florida, though.
Let's get to Florida, though.
And well, so Bianchi had a question for you.
Something.
Hold on just a second. I got a caller here. All right. You want to go ahead? All right. Go ahead and finish then. I'm sorry. Michelle?
No, I was just going to say, I think you'll see something from us.
Okay.
We did a joint resolution for the Second Amendment last session, or not last session, because we've had many, when the federal government was insinuating they were going to take our guns. We were like, okay, you know what, let's just send a clear message to the White House that they're doing that. We will not allow it. Florida will not allow them to come in and do that. So I do wonder if there is a plan. I have not talked to leadership. Like you said, it just happened last night. But I would not mm-hmm. be surprised if we had some legislation crafted and pushed through pretty quickly as a priority of the governor and of course, the legislative body that would try to help prevent something. Now, I don't know what that would look like because I'm not a constitutionalist.
Well, I got
but,
some ideas.
You know,
well, no, let me give you a couple of ideas in a second. I want to get Bianchi on the line. He's my caller here from the Midwest. And Bianchi, do you have some things for Michelle Salzman, who's running again for State House in Florida, for state-federal boundaries? What do you think?
Well, yeah, that's a good idea. There are state boundaries. National boundaries start at the water edge back in about 20 feet. But beyond that, now you're in a particular state, and states have a right to protect their boundaries. Also, I think states have a right to tell the federal government to go to hell on issues, especially those that is unconstitutional. You are a sovereign country, quote, state, and you need to exercise those rights. You have a right to reel in the federal government because all powers of the federal government actually come from the states. Your lawmakers come from the states. Your U.S. senators come from the states.
Yeah, I'm with Bianchi. I don't want resolutions. I want actual legislation and restrictions on these people operating in our state. That's where I think we should go.
Yeah,
and don't forget
we'll see.
Hold on, Bianchi. We'll get to elections.
Forget the ballot. Remind her about our ballot legislation too.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to let you talk about that bill too because that's something that would be a good idea here. We got Second Amendment stuff. We got the ballots. I want to get Representative Salzman's response to this. That we really should be reining in these federal people. They shouldn't be operating in our state without the governor knowing it. They should. I don't even know if they should even be armed in our state. Maybe they should be escorted by county sheriffs. You know, why are we allowing feds to operate openly in our state? You know, invading the house of President Trump. So I want something a lot stronger than just a resolution saying we don't want you doing this. And I know you're not a constitutional scholar, but I don't think – but you still have the responsibility of protecting the citizens of Florida against what really is a rogue federal government and a rogue Justice Department, you know, FBI, KGB, as
well,
we call them.
Well, let's be clear here. Yeah. I didn't say that we weren't doing anything. I was giving you an example of what we did whenever the federal government threatened to do something. We said, well, you send a threat, we're going to send you the message in response so that you understand where we stand. So if you attempt that, you know what we're doing. So I never said that we weren't doing anything. I said that it's been less than 24 hours. I just want to make – well, you never know who's listening, and I need to make sure that's clear.
Oh, no. Feel
so
free. Make that point.
We definitely, like I said, the governor, everybody has came out and said this is unacceptable. We stand firm by that. From what I understand, and I know that people don't believe everything they hear, and some people believe everything they hear, but from what I understand, the president didn't even know – I won't say his name – didn't even know this was happening. So, I mean, I don't even have all the facts in to understand where in the world this came from. I understand some judge signed off on it and actually allowed this to happen. And I may God be with him or her, whoever that was that had the audacity to do that. But it's my understanding that the White House didn't even, or at least the president didn't even know that this was happening when it was happening. So whatever is going on.
I mean, Brandon?
On,
Brandon's not the president.
I'm not going to give anybody extra airtime, but. You know, I don't even know what happened, but what I know or how it got here. But what I know is Florida doesn't stand for that. You know, we were there during whenever they opened the borders. We sent our people down there. I was standing right next to the governor when we sent our first people from Florida to Texas. We were right side by side in lockstep. You know, we passed ballot legislation. We actually are funding an investigative and an authoritative source that can actually go after people that are going against our free and fair elections. And I was right there with the governor when he signed off on that. So we as in the panhandle of Florida and the governor are all on the same page. So I
we're doing the right things, and I'm on your side. Don't get me wrong. I just want to make it better.
Have a good actionable response, you know, and I can't even, I'm not going to try to pretend to have an idea of what that's going to be. Because
I want you to look into protecting our citizens and having a border that if federal officials come into Florida, there's certain criteria by which they have to go by. So I'm hoping that we'll extend into that area. Obviously, this just happened last night. I'm not expecting you to have a plan now. But as far as it goes, when you start making the plan, let's look into some serious restrictions on federal people working within our state, because I think that's where we need to go.
Yeah.
For an election bill, there's two bills. I have one, and then Pianki has one, too, that he's written. So, Pianki, why don't you talk about your bill and see if we could Michelle would be interested in sponsoring that one, maybe.
Well, my bill would separate the federal candidates' ballots for a congressperson, a U.S. senator, and, of course, president and vice president. Those ballots should be separated from state and local ballots, and for obvious reasons. One, the federal government, as the Constitution dictates, have a right to set the vetting system for those that participate in the federal election. Not saying that they can't, but there should be a better vetting system. Your ballot should be tallied and counted on site, not shipped across the state to some remote location. And I think that's the way that should be, because you never will get states to all cooperate. They're not going to happen. But the federal government has the right, according to the Constitution, to set the criteria for its ballot. And if you got some areas that's led to illegals vote, well, if they got a ballot that's got all these candidacies on it, do you think they're just going to stay down at the bottom tier? They're going to work their way up to the top and put marks alongside the president and vice president's name.
Yeah, let's look at the basic thing is to separate the federal from the state ballots, so we don't have that kind of crossover, that especially when you have states with illegal aliens voting like California. There's a way to separate those out. Is that something that makes sense that you want to take a look at maybe?
It doesn't make any sense to me. It sounds like extra government layers and extra government processes, and it doesn't sound like we're making government very efficient and fair. It sounds like we're segmenting it and trying to create two separate agencies and two separate entities. I mean, I don't know, and I would have to look at it. Like, we're just having a very cursory conversation. So I'm not saying absolutely not, never. I'm saying it sounds like more government to me. I don't like the sound of more government. So you'd have to send me stuff and really sell me on it.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. This would be, but it would be the same day, same election. But the thing is that you have different ballots, and that way, you know, people that qualify under a state under a lesser standard than maybe a federal standard. You know, it wouldn't apply to Florida as much, but we could make a pretty strict standard here that you actually separate the federal from the state ballots. My idea is a little different.
Interesting.
Yeah, Bianca, did you have something, or is that Michelle or someone?
I thought I said, no, make sure we get our contact information so we can get a copy of it too, so she can further investigate.
Well, I'll send it to her. I'm in contact with
everything is happening on the same day in the same building. They just, when people go in to do the federal, they turn left. When they get through, then they can go right and continue on with their voting process for state and local.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that makes things more fair or more whatever it was you were trying to accomplish, because the same people that are managing the ballot are going to manage the other ballot. If we're not creating more government entity and more government process, and we're just having two separate ballots, which is still more government process and more government printing, but nonetheless, we'll entertain that. You're going to have two separate sections. So unless you have the federal government in there managing their own elections, which means more government, you're still going to have the same people processing those ballots. It's still the same. It's still going to be the same thing.
Yeah, no, they could have bonded people working with the federal ballot. Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1 says that these regulations, the federal government, but Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. It's not removing the location. It's just that the federal ballot has a separate vetting system that's more stringent than what these state and locals are. And you know, the
why
state and locals can't be too strict.
Why would you have
because they allow illegals to vote. They're making more illegals to vote. Illegal can go in and get a ballot just with a driver's license.
Not here.
In some states.
Well, I'm going to tell you, not in Florida. Okay, I don't know what's going on in other states, but we don't play that. We have free and fair elections in Florida. We ain't messing around. So I will entertain a conversation and a review of it, but just from the sound of it, it sounds like it just would create more processes with the same people managing the ballots, the same people managing the processes. And so you would still have the same issue of potential fraud, waste, and abuse. And when you remove and I'm just blown away at the fact that local and state elections are more important than federal elections. Local and state elections actually dictate how you are going to live and breathe every day. Especially now Roe v. Wade is overturned. Now even that is a state level thing. So all of the stuff that happens at the state is more applicable to your daily life, your access to health care, your ability to drive to work, your firefighters being able to get to your home if your house is on fire, your ability to keep and bear arms, you know, your ability to save lives. I mean, all of these things, the things that matter to an average American citizen, a majority of the most important components of that are your state legislators and your local county commissioners. So when you say that the federal government free and clear, yes, the president of the United States is critical. We need a true leader in office that doesn't, you know, hide in the basement. But the point is, the local governments and the state governments have more influence on you and your daily life and your freedom than a federal government office does. So I would argue in the preliminary conversation of this that our local elections are critical and important. They must be free and fair just as much and just as importantly as the federal election should be free and fair, without influence from illegals voting or ballot harvesting or stuffing or any of the things that we've discovered in other states. I fully support free and fair elections. Like I said, we're Florida. We are very proud of how we do things here. But you can send it to me and we can chat. I'm just from the arguments that you've given, I need to just make sure that you understand that I won't agree with that mindset, because I think that what I do is far more important than what Congressman Gates does on a daily basis. Now, what he does is very critical to communities and our nation, but the everyday lives of citizens are equally as important as the security of the whole nation as a whole. We have to be able to secure our Florida borders, and I think you made that point clear earlier. You know, you said, well, the borders need to be secure. Yes, they do. Florida has the right to say we're not taking illegal immigrants, which we do not. We do not allow them to stay here. We bust them back out or fly them back out. So it's the same thing in the scenario of all other actions. You know, the state has a lot of control and power, and whenever you elect your local officials and you're not having a free and fair election for those, then you're setting yourself up for failure. So no, it doesn't matter who the president of the United States is, you're going to fail in your state. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, that does make sense, and I'm happy that Florida does it. But, you know, a key element in your state legislature is that the people get behind them and make them do what they're supposed to do. It's just like January 6th. If in those states, where those controversies between states, if people had made their state legislatures take care of those problems in the correct way, well, there wouldn't have been January 6th.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
A couple of points I want to make on that definitely too. Florida, would it be possible for Florida to have a stand on what happened with the election? And we've got six states with Trump electors that should have been taken into Congress. Mike Pence totally destroyed that. We're not a battleground state. We went for Trump. But is there a way that the Florida state legislature could say, look, you know, we don't recognize this administration. We want January 6th to be fulfilled. We haven't had our challenge of the Trump electors from the states, what is it, Arizona, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. They have Trump electors out there. I mean, as far as we're concerned here, the election was 316 Trump to 222 Brandon. You know, should Florida take a more active role in pursuing the investigation and declaring who really is president or at least a defiance or a non-recognition of the current folks in Washington?
I can tell you that from my conversations with the executive branch, not just the governor or the governor's staff, but the whole branch itself, my conversations with the state leadership in the House and the Senate, we all want to make sure Florida is free and fair. Okay. And we all just want to make sure that we're set up for success moving forward. And that's why you haven't seen, a bunch of stuff coming from us. We're focused on prevention and making things better. How can we help Florida move on and be better? There's nothing Florida can or can't do, or nothing Florida can do to change anything that happened in the past. There's nothing that's going to be, there's no action Florida will take or could take that's going to change it, because I guarantee you they would have done it already. We literally house Donald Trump in Florida. Like, we have Ron DeSantis, one of the greatest governors of all time, and I truly feel that way. I mean, I have literally worked beside him many, many days. I've flown all over the state with him in his private plane. We've done a lot of stuff together. I truly feel like he is an incredible leader. If all of these people here that are here haven't found a way to do something about it, then we're almost to the next election. I mean, it's time to nominate our next presidential nominee for all parties. So I would say we've moved on in a way of not moving on, of forgetting what happened, certainly not blowing it off, but in a way of what can we control in the state of Florida and how can we make sure that we do what we can. And part of that is the election campaign going on right now. A big part of what we're doing in the whole state of Florida is making sure we are turning those Democrats to Republicans. And then not only that, because now we are a red state, we have more registered Republicans than Democrats. The next step is not just that, but to get them to go out to the polls and really just show up. We want to send a message to the entire nation that Florida stands for freedom. So our goal, our objective right now, is November. If you talk to the governor, he'll tell you straight up, we got to get past November before we do anything else. But it's not just get past November. We know Ron DeSantis is going to win. There's no doubt he's going to win. But what we need is him to win big. We need him. We need to send all the Republicans in the state of Florida. We need to take over, get a supermajority, which is the plan. So all of this stuff isn't just because we want to have easy ways to vote, and easy conversations when we're making legislation. But really, it's about a bigger picture. We need to show America, all of America. We need to show the world that what Ron DeSantis did, what Florida did, what we do here is what the people want. And when you do what's right for the people, what's right for freedom, then you will get the people to stand behind you. So our objective right now is just to send a message. So.
Yeah, I want to get you back on a few issues. We have limited time here. No, and that's fine. I mean, I understand that. I don't have a lot of faith in the Republican Party. You know, I'm registered independent most of the time. My experience, especially at the national level, is not good. And so I want to see them actually follow through. Now, the state level is different. Florida's really good. But even Governor DeSantis had COVID lockdowns in the beginning, and he switched very quickly, which is good. But even he, you know, kind of fell for the problem with COVID. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. We've got a problem, I think, coming in Florida with this huge population growth. In Santa Rosa County, where I live, which is next to Escambia County, you know, which you represent, we've got uncontrolled growth right now. We've got, I think we're sacrificing our agriculture. I think we're sacrificing, you know, our open space, our resources. And do we have I know they don't have a county plan because I've asked, but is there a state plan to manage the growth of people that are coming here so that we can keep our agriculture, we can keep our industries, we can keep our tourism, and we can keep our beaches, and we can keep the things we need to keep while still allowing, you know, a certain measure of growth? Is there any, what's the plan basically for the growth as people leave the communist states and come to free Florida?
Sure. That's a valid question. And I'll tell you, my area in the Florida House of expertise to speak to all of the specifics is healthcare. So as we venture into that conversation, I can tell you that I know that we just passed legislation even this past year and the year before to focus on making sure we protect the environment and we protect our ag. That's a big component, protecting ag. Every year we evaluate the legislation that we currently have, and we take baby steps towards making sure that the ag community is well protected, and we pass some common sense stuff this past session or the sessions. We had 7 sessions in a year and a half, if that tells you how busy we've been. But
we need our farmland.
The answer is yes.
You know, we need our farmland.
We
don't want
we are
housing development taking
farm
over the best agricultural land. That's my concern.
Yes. Yeah. And so we've made jokes in the Florida House in the hallways and whatnot in the Capitol, really. Preemption, you know, we passed a lot of preemption bills. We actually passed a 2A preemption bill past session that said, because we found out local municipalities were creating their own gun laws. Like you can't conceal carry here. You can't, you know, doesn't matter if you have a permit, you're not allowed to come in, or they would deny them the ability to get a permit. It was a lot of things going on at the local level. So we said, you know what, how about we just write a law that says you can't preempt our laws? And we did that. We passed it, signed by the governor, but that's just a tiny example of that whole oversight. So when we see a preemption, when we see local municipalities overstepping their bounds, we usually step in and do something about it. So the idea is to let the local agencies, local governments, tell us what's best for them, which is why we had state representatives and senators to come to the Capitol. But if we feel like those people aren't able to control the message, or, you know, or we're overstepping, then we certainly will come in and do something preemptively to help that. But we have
but
done
you need
a lot
to preserve your farmland. You know, I understand the environmental preservation, but I'll tell you, with the food shortages and the problems we're having and the capture of land by the Bill Gates and the Chinese and everything else that's going on, we need to really, I mean, I think it's called permanent easement, and it's probably at the local level or the county level, but we need to start setting aside farmland right now that stays farmland, that will not be developed in the future, you know, no matter how many people
we
get.
If you
that's what I would do.
If you circle back to me on that, I can tell you, I can research and see if Wilton Simpson or others have a plan for that specifically. I would say there is something in the works. I, like I said, I'm not in the ag. I'm not in that silo. I don't have any ag committees. When we get bills in front of me, I research those and they make sense and I vote yes or vote no. But typically, I don't research it until it's there. So I'm sure we have a plan or something, and I'm happy to you know,
let's find out.
You some information.
We need one.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure we do. Well, I'm sure there is a plan. Like we have in healthcare and in justice, I'm in judiciary as well. There are plans that the agencies have to submit to the legislature before we approve their budget. It says this is what we're going to do in the next 5 years, and this is why we're doing these little things and why we need this money. So I'm pretty certain that they have those, but I'm not in that committee to give you, you know, a summary.
That's okay. I want to try and get a little shorter answers if we can, because we've got a bunch of issues. I want to hold up Pianchi for a second, too, because there's a bunch of topics we probably should cover here. Illegal aliens. I know you said that the state's trying to get rid of them, but we have a plan here that I wrote for Santa Rosa County, a bill that creates illegal alien-free zones. It's the opposite of a sanctuary city or sanctuary county, where any illegal alien within our district or jurisdiction here, the subject to civil asset forfeiture. That would be house, car, property. The state level is probably bank accounts, things like that. So the whole point is to make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. And that's one of the bills that I've sent your staff, and hopefully you get a chance to take a look at. Even though it's county, I think the state should be an illegal alien free zone at the state level, and that illegal aliens should have their stuff confiscated or leave. And the whole point is to make them leave. If you make it impossible for illegal aliens to live in Florida, they're going to leave, and they can go to the socialist states, as far as I'm concerned, or ideally leave and go home and apply to become lawful immigrants, in which case I'd welcome them back, maybe. But what do you think of the idea? Because you're on judiciary. What do you think of using civil asset forfeiture at both the local and state level to confiscate illegal alien stuff, and the companies that hire them compensate their stuff? And so that anybody, and Catholic charities that are illegally bringing, you know, aliens into our state, confiscate their stuff. And so you work your way up the chain of illegal alien aiding and abetting, and use civil asset forfeiture to combat this. How's that for an idea?
Well, I am one of the most people would call strong advocates for border security.
Well, this
so
is strong. This is very strong.
I can get behind anything that, you know, keeps our borders secure. I use the same story everybody uses. If you're in an airplane and the oxygen mask drops, you know, you can't give it to your kid first or you'll die. And then who's going to keep the kid alive? You know, it's the same thing. We keep our, we're letting these people in, and we got starving veterans can't even get health care and,
okay.
or
so
homes.
So let me bring
know,
you back to
for,
the question.
So,
Let me bring you back to civil asset forfeiture and the state. I'm worried about the state border of Florida. We have the right under the 14th Amendment, you know, citizens of the United States are citizens of the state of Florida. Non-citizens of the United States are non-citizens of the state of Florida. We can seize their stuff. So I'm trying to get, you know, I obviously don't know all the implications and all the ramifications. I don't have a bill in front of you, but just the basic principle of civil asset forfeiture for taking illegal alien stuff. This is local procedure. There's no federal involvement. You're not rounding people up. You know, you're doing what you would do to drug dealers or any other criminal. Hold on, Piaki. We'll get to you, but I wanted to get an answer, you know, sort of like a yes or no to this. Well, thank you. In that case,
What do you want me to say? I'm sorry. What am I answering?
Would you consider civil asset forfeiture as a viable procedure, as a technique to get rid of illegal aliens from our state? That's what I want to know.
Okay. So I don't commit to any legislation when I'm not your elected official yet. So I'm not saying I'm going to sponsor anything, but yes, I can certainly commit to that. Does that make
sense?
That's
fair enough.
People call me all the time. Oh, I need you to do this bill. Hold on a minute. I still have to get elected before I promise anything. So I do not tell anybody. Although I have told the NRA, I would love to have that constitutional carry bill. I'm not going to lie. But outside of that,
that's my next question.
Outside of that one little thing. The answer is I fully support that. I would certainly vote for it, and I would put my name. I would co-sponsor that.
I'll send you. Your staff has that bill, and like I say, it's a county bill, but you could adapt it to the state. All right, Pianchi, quick question, and then we have a few more topics here.
No, like you said, when drug dealers acquire assets, they are forfeited, and that there is a good idea. Illegals should not be working in the United States acquiring assets.
Yeah, Michelle.
Yeah.
Representative. Let's get you back.
I think that was the end of the point.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to say.
Oh, okay,
that
no, that's
just
fine.
A statement.
Yeah, I think we've covered it then. That's,
I mean,
that's,
I don't think
good.
I need to be here at all, but that's a,
well,
I mean,
what I'm doing is
I have no mercy on that, including the children. I mean, I'm not trying to be ugly, but we have our own kids we got to take care of.
Well, let's talk about that too, because that's another issue that I want. Florida should non-comply with the Plyler v. Doe decision. So this is a decision by the Supreme Court that is forcing states, they think, it's an illegal decision, but we should reject that decision in the state of Florida, saying we're not going to educate the children of illegal aliens and have them take the space of American citizens and have them take our resources. It's basically enforcing foreign aid. You know, on foreign nationals, on American citizens to pay for foreign nationals to be in our schools. And the Supreme Court cannot authorize American taxpayers to pay foreign aid. You know, so there's no reason for this. So the decision is Plyler v. Doe. So here's something to work on, too. And I think I've said this, if I haven't, I will. But Florida needs to reject the Supreme Court Plyler v. Doe decision and say, we're not going to educate illegal aliens. We are going to check the citizenship of the parents. Not only to victimize the kids, but I want their parents to take responsibility for them and go home and get an education, homing whatever country they're from. We are not, you know, we are not, Americans should not be victims of a rogue Supreme Court, you know, especially the Brennan court from way back when. And he said openly in the Supreme Court case that we're doing this so that these people will grow up to be responsible adults. Well, illegal aliens shouldn't be here long enough to grow up to be responsible adults. They should go home, apply to become immigrants, and come in the legal way. So if Florida wants to take that
I do want to say that I certainly support the melting pot theory. I certainly support all folks coming into America. I think that cultural adversity is something we lack in a lot of communities, and that's why we have so much fear and hatred of other types of people. So I don't encourage any of that, but I do strongly stand behind illegal immigration laws. And so I would say if that bill came before me, I would vote yes, and I'd probably put my name on it too. You know, I mean, okay. I have that line right there. You know, we got to take care of ourselves first. And our education system, as much as we try, is not the best. And we have a long way to go before our babies are, you know, getting the excellent care and education that we would love to give them as Americans. So when we're taking resources away from our children and giving it to other people, you know, so I do support, like I said, I'm one of the strongest people on immigration law that you'll probably meet. And it's not because I'm hateful or don't love people or that I don't like,
you know, different cultures being
a part of our community.
You don't have to say that on this show because we're with you on that. But
it's just the right thing to do. Take care of Americans first. America first, period, end of story. Matt Gaetz says it best. America first, America first. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. So.
Yeah. Immigrants that come to the United States should come to add to, not take from. And I'll probably be interested in
illegal aliens aren't immigrants.
Yeah, I would also be interested in how you deal with federal agents that come into the state of Florida. I think they should check in with the local sheriff or department, and at that point, they should leave their weapons with that local sheriff. They should not be able to roam around in your state with weapons, knocking on people's doors by themselves.
I agree with that too. I think that all federal people in our state should be escorted and work with and be under the direction of county sheriffs and state police and local law enforcement. And that's what we talked about earlier. I think you've commented on that already, but if you want to make a brief comment on that, I've got another issue for you.
No, you can move to the next issue.
Okay, so I wrote a bill it's the Florida Voter Registration Information Security Act. And what this does, we have a problem in Florida. And I love the fact that we have sunshine laws, that we're open and transparent, and you have to publish stuff, but there is a flaw. You know, before the internet, it was one thing to publish people's voter registration information. But ever since the internet, everybody except for legislators, police, judges, and things like that, our information, when we register to vote, our name, address, phone number, email address, party registration, all that stuff is public.
Do you have
and
a shouldn't be. License? Do you have a nurse? Are you a licensed nurse? I know everything about you.
And that's you shouldn't. You should. So say someone wants to, you know, break into my place as you know, well, I hate Action Radio. I'm going to, you know, and they look up stuff or, you know, you're protected, but most citizens aren't. Anybody who does anything can be a victim. Look at all the homes of the Supreme Court justices, you know, Kavanaugh in particular. People look up their addresses and there they go. We need to take this out. We need to stop publishing on the internet information from the voter registration rolls.
Well, I can tell you that I'm not protected because I did not choose that option.
Okay.
So you can choose that option as someone like myself. Actually, just about anybody can apply. We have this past 2 years, my past term, because we've had seven sessions. I can't tell you which one it was. Mm-hmm. We opened up that restriction a little bit wider. So we created an ability for more types of folks to be able to get protected because apparently it's only, you know, a small few that can apply for that. So we expanded it partially, I think, don't put me down as a promise. I'm just saying I believe that we as a legislature are trying to get to that point of, you know, protecting all voter information, you know, baby steps.
we'll take a big one.
We don't,
you know, everybody should be protected.
And we don't publish it on the internet. I'm not sure who does, but to get access to the voter registration, you have to petition the supervisor of elections, and then mm-hmm. he validates your whatever it is that he does, and then he sends it to you, and then you have that information as a citizen. But it's not published on the internet so freely. Now, what is published on the internet, if you own a home, I can look that up. I don't need permission from anybody. I go to the property appraiser online, mm-hmm. and I can find out who owns anything. So, it's not just voter registration. Public record is public record. When you get a license for anything, in at least in my state, I can go to Department of, it's DBPR, I don't know what the acronym specifically stands for, but where you get business licenses, I can go there and I can get a copy of it. I can say, hey, I want a copy of Saul's studio, who owns that and where they're from and all that stuff, and they have to send it to me. So the protection of information, which is why Florida is so big on data security, why we tried to pass legislation the past two terms on data mm-hmm. security, is exactly that. People's information is so free and accessible, and it's not secure. So how do we secure people's information? How do we protect the average citizen? And unfortunately and fortunately, it's a double-edged sword, you have the First Amendment. So that has been a big component of the conversation, and how do we get to that? So Florida
free speech is
trying,
personal information and free speech are two totally different issues. You know,
I understand what you're saying to me, but I also understand what I get from the constitutional lawyers when I'm in the Florida House and we're talking about legislation. So
well, I think I need to talk to them.
Well, moving right along, the point is we are working on it. We have tried a couple of times. You know, it's been a priority of Governor DeSantis, which is why it passed the House. It didn't pass the Senate. But we are working diligently, and we will continue to work towards data privacy. It's a big part of what Florida wants to achieve and set the precedent for the nation. But it's a process. You know, we got to get enough people on board. And we got to get it right. You know, we can't just throw it out there and hope that it works. We're pretty careful about that, too. So we agree with that, and we are working on what's the best way to do that. So I would say to be continued.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I just think it should be blanket protection for everybody. And I know it comes from the voter registration because that's the only source of the information that is all the stuff that I filled out for voters is online. So that's where we need to curb it. Let's get to the Second Amendment. There is no excuse that I can think of for Florida not to be a constitutional carry state. Florida led with concealed carry back in the 80s, 87, 88, I think it was. Why don't we have constitutional carry? What's going on?
Well, and that's why I got beat up so bad. It's kind of funny because my opponent and the far right, which I'm told I'm very far right, but there's even further right apparently. They attacked me because I said because I was honest, and you know I'm always going to be honest. I don't care how many votes it costs me. You don't want to vote for me? Don't vote for me. But I'm not going to blow smoke up your butt and tell you it's going to be one way. It's not going to be that way.
That's why you're on the show.
And
I appreciate your honesty.
And I'm a freshman in the legislature, and I ran off of safety, infrastructure, and education. I said, I'm going to focus on the fundamentals of the government. And by the way, I strongly support the Second Amendment. I strongly support
I'm not
right
blaming
life,
you for not having concealed carry. I just want to know why we don't have it. It just doesn't make sense to me, considering the Constitution
mandates.
I'm
trying to give you the full picture here. So I get to Tallahassee, and I tell them, you know, I want to see constitutional carry. How do we do that? You know, what about red flag laws? You know, the 21 years old to buy a gun, like all this stuff is baloney. How do we fix that? And it was very clear. The people that voted, that Marjorie Stoneman Douglas bill, the people that put that in place are now your Senate president, your, you know, speaker, your all of your leaders of all of the committees. They're sitting right there, and they did that, right? They didn't do constitutional carry, but they passed a bill that did some things that further took away our right to bear arms. So those folks are, you know, they fell on a sword, they laid on a sword. There was some really great stuff in that bill. I'm not going to, you know, argue all the bits and pieces. So, you know, it was a world of compromise and a world where there wasn't as many Republicans. So now we have all these Republicans. So what are we doing? Like, can we get this done? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you the idea, from what I understand, from what I've been told by the governor, by my speaker, by the Senate president, by all of the leaders, is the goal is to get it across the line this next session.
Okay, good.
We have a we even have a new NRA president in Florida. We have in every state he has been in has passed constitutional carry with him there, and it is his number one goal. And this is from his words, his mouth to me. It's his number one goal to get constitutional carry passed. So I don't know why it wasn't the right time this past 2 years. I would assume just the conversation is still fresh from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I can't really speak to specifics, but I know that when I asked, they said, it's coming, be patient. And as a freshman legislator, I want to get money back in the hands of my community. I want to make sure that we're protecting our citizens in Escambia County. So to be effective, we make friends. We don't make enemies. So I agreed. I said, you know what? I will support that. You know, and we passed things. We passed pro 2A legislation. So we gave ourselves a little bit of movement, but the real movement needs to be get rid of red flag laws, you know, lower the age to 18, and get that permitless carry passed. And I believe that at least permitless carry is going to happen soon just by way of what everybody says. So I can't say why it didn't happen. I can only say why they told me it wasn't going to happen. And
no, that makes sense. And we've got a couple of folks.
Well,
I'm just going to make a point real quick. We only have a couple minutes left. Well, actually, we can stay a little bit longer if Representative Saltzman has the time. If not, then
I thought this was only 30 minutes, so now I'm 30 minutes late to my next meeting, but I'm staying on because it's taken us forever to get together.
No, I really appreciate that, too. And, of course, you're welcome back anytime after the primaries and or even before. It's really up to you. We have a lot of things to talk about. But we have a couple of reporters here. If you want to talk about gun issues, we've got Jim Dykes, who's the director of Florida Carry. We've got Shirley Watchell, who's the D.C. Project Women and Guns report that she does Friday also. So if you ever want to join us on a Friday. Let me just let you open
I
it up.
I love Florida Carry, by the way. Florida Carry is a phenomenal, true Second Amendment advocacy group. I am so proud of all the work that they've done in Florida to really just get out there and help protect citizens. But you mentioned them. I got to give them a huge shout out. What a great organization. Just so phenomenal.
Well, call Jim on Friday when you have a chance. Yeah, it'd be great to. You can feel free to talk to him about that. Let me just ask you then, anything that we haven't covered that we should cover? I appreciate the extra time that you had for us today, even though, like I say, we usually have a feisty debate, so that's good. But what haven't we covered that you wanted to get the message out on? Take all the time you want.
I think you've covered it all. I think you know that we covered health care, we covered security, secure borders. You know, we didn't really talk about first responders, but just know that Florida don't play that. We love our first responders, and we are not going to let anybody go against them, and we're not going to defund them. We actually increased our pay for them, and we even gave them more incentives and homestead exemptions and everything. We do everything we can for them. So we didn't talk about them, but it's something we love here in Florida. And if you're a first responder anywhere in the United States and you don't feel the love, come on over. We'll take you.
There you go. Contact information, how do folks get a hold of your campaign?
Sure. My email address is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at Michelle Salzman for House, .com. That's S-A-L-Z-M-A-N. You can go on Facebook and find me, Michelle Salzman. You can find me on the internet. If you just Google Michelle Salzman, it'll pull up my website pretty quickly. But, yeah, call, text, email, Facebook message. I read everything that comes in personally. I just feel like I want to make sure that if there's something happening, I want to know about it. So anybody can feel free to reach out anytime.
Great. Well, good luck. I think, I kind of like having
you
there. And like I say, and I like the fact that we can debate these things and really get into the issues. And so that's good. So you want to come back, just let me know. I mean, it's that simple.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Y'all have
Thanks
a blessed
much.
Day, and it was nice to virtually meet you on the other end.
We met in person. We were in an event.
No, your guest. Your guest.
Oh, Pianki? Yeah, Pianki's somewhere in Missouri, so you won't. He's like my co-host.
Nice to virtually meet you.
Yeah,
well,
Pianki's
I love
great.
It. Nice. Thanks for coming.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Take care. right. Bye.
All right. You take care. All right. There we go. So that's Representative Michelle Saltzman running again from Escambia County. And I guess I forgot her district, but if you get her contact information, you can take care of that. So this is fun. This is another crazy day on Action Radio. And I love these things. And actually, now that I have a little time, because apparently we can run over. And so what I'm going to do is play you our latest Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on Federalists, number 13. So I'll play that. We'll take a few extra minutes to do that. And listen in, tell me what you think, and I'll give you our final closing information when I get back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Paper number 13 was written by Alexander Hamilton and published November 28, 1787. It is titled Advantage of the Union in Respect to Economy in Government. In the very first paragraph, he says, in part, as connected with the subject of revenue, we may with propriety consider that of economy. If the states are united under one government, there will be but one national civil list to support. So right from the very beginning, Hamilton characterizes the states as united under one government. This is outrageous. The whole foundation of the United States is that they are individual and independent states first, united only because they happen to be next to each other on the same piece of continent. But in every other aspect, the states are as independent countries, except for a very few areas which are to be delegated to the federal government through the Constitution that the Federalists are allegedly trying to advocate. But you can see right here why there was so much objection to the Constitution from the anti-Federalists, who didn't mind the idea of the Constitution so much as long as the spirit of the Constitution matched the independence and self-governance of the states declared in the Articles of Confederation. It is apparent that the Federalists wanted to unite the states as subordinate and subservient parts of the whole United States, which are united not by, but under a strong national top-down government. You can clearly see in this one sentence why the anti-Federalists were so strongly opposed to the completely new status of the states under the Constitution as outlined in these papers by the Federalists. Then Hamilton says, the entire separation of the states into 13 unconnected sovereignties is a project too extravagant and too replete with danger to have many advocates. In other words, the United States as constituted is really too dangerous an idea because the states can't be trusted to be independent states. They have to be controlled by the national government lest they become a few factions. And then in Hamilton's own words, dangerous. Dangerous to whom? He and his fellow Federalists of the self-appointed elite? One could only assume so. Hamilton revives the often repeated theme that the states can't be trusted to remain independent and individual. They will, as all states have done in Europe, create various factions. Hamilton bases his arguments on this imaginary projection of how he thinks the states will group and makes that the reason the federal government must rule the states. He groups the 13 states like this. The ideas of men who speculate upon the dismemberment of the empire seem generally turned towards three confederacies, one consisting of the four northern, another of the four middle, and a third of the five southern states. He even defeats his own argument with the admission that this is speculation. And what is this talk of us being an empire? Hamilton says, no well-informed man will suppose that the affairs of such a confederacy can be properly regulated by a government less comprehensive in its organs or institutions than that which has been proposed by the convention. In other words, if you don't agree with him, you are an idiot because you aren't well-informed. Heard that theme from government all the time. In Hamilton's warped mind of pretty much imposing a British monarchy on the states, wrapped in flowery language, he describes the hierarchy under his constitution. He says, "Civil power, properly organized and exerted, is capable of diffusing its force to a very great extent and can, in a manner, reproduce itself in every part of a great empire by a judicious arrangement of subordinate institutions." Or, to put this in modern English, we need a government big enough to be in every state and locality with enough agencies and departments to control everything. Unfortunately, he got his wish, and here we are. Eventually, Hamilton engages in the topic for which he titled his Federalist paper, the economy. However, an analysis of the last paragraph will display an arrogance and a plan not to advance the economy for the benefit of all through free markets, where the federal government would standardize only what is necessary between the states to keep the free flow of goods and services moving, with things like consistent taxes, laws, and even train track widths. No, what Hamilton is really worried about is a free economy among the independent states where the feds don't get their share of revenue, taxes, or control. Hamilton concludes Federalist 13 with this. If, in addition to the consideration of a plurality of civil lists, we take into view the number of persons who must necessarily be employed to guard the inland communication between the different confederacies against illicit trade, and who, in time, will infallibly spring up out of the necessities of revenue, and if we also take into view the military establishments, which it has been shown would unavoidably result from the jealousies and conflicts of the several nations into which the states would be divided, we shall clearly discover that a separation would be not less injurious to the economy than to the tranquility, commerce, revenue, and liberty of every part. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Well, I just thought to end on a high note. This has been a great day. We had Shelby, Cruise and Travel. We had Josie of the Latino Report. We had Dorothy with our Sex and Sensuality Report. And we had our special guest today was State Representative Michelle Salzman, who's running from Escambia County for State House again.
And so we shall see what happens. I support her, you know, even though I ask her, you know, a lot of tough questions. And you know, when I think I'm getting a bunch of extra stuff, it's like, okay, we got it. You know, I got more issues. You know, you probably feel that as I was talking to her, but she's wonderful. And so glad to have her on the show. And that's, you know, you want to get on the show, just ask, you know, and or just say yes when I ask you. It's not that hard. You know, and we have a pretty decent audience and it's growing all the time. And so that's the good part. All right. Tomorrow we've got our usual crazy bunch, Bill Fecky. We've got with his report. We've got Wendy with the Oh My God report. We've got our Wild Women of Wellness. We've got Lindsay. We've got Chansey and we've got Paige. And then in the last hour, 9 o'clock, we've got Captain Tom Stewart coming back. For another report, and it looks like he's going to be a regular on the show. So Captain Tom Stewart, who was forced out of the Marines because he didn't want to take an experimental, you know, COVID jab. And so he'll be doing hopefully a defense report for us, and we'll figure out a name for it. But anyway, it's going to be fabulous to have him on the show regularly. And all the veterans out there, you know, feel free to call in with questions, and hopefully you'll be able to become citizen lobbyists, citizen advocates, and continue the fight that you started, you know, when you first started serving our country in the armed forces. And from what I know, military folks, you know, that service never ends. And so we have a way here that you can serve too as a citizen advocate, you know, passing on links to bills and talking about issues and things like that. And so that's going to be a whole new avenue to explore as well. I'm looking for a couple of lobbyists. So maybe some retired veterans who are in the DC area or near a state capital want to give me a shout here. We'll see if we can get you actually lobbying and presenting bills directly to legislators. I mean, that's what we do. So fun stuff. Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Our broadcast page has all kinds of other information like how to call in on Skype. We've got our discount codes for the various affiliates that we have. We've got a PayPal place, paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio, if you want to contribute. And if you want to advertise on our show, you know, get me at greg@writeyourlaws.com. That's my email. And so I'll be happy to work with you on that. In the meantime, I will see you tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so 7 a.m. Central Time tomorrow.